start our meeting, I can see from my gadget that at least we can be able to make a quorum. And also I see that honorable members and also officials and our stakeholders have logged on, and it means then therefore we can start our meeting, though we will wait for the confirmation of the attendance. And let's first bow our heads where we are. Thanks ever so much, really, for holding the fort. Let's bow our head for the while, for the moment of silence. Amen. Thank you very much. I hope for now Lindy has logged on, but I don't see her.
I'm here, Chair.
The person she's here. Oh, sorry, but I will be assisting today. She's still in hospital. Yes. She just had to be in so that she can open the platform for us, Chair. I can't do that for myself.
Is she still in hospital?
Yes, Chair.
I'm still in hospital, Chair, and I can just assist for the smooth running of the meeting, just for the first part, just to confirm the attendance and the apologies I've received, because the people are communicating directly to, and then thereafter I'll give it to Yoli to take over.
No problem, man. We suspect we don't We wish you a speedy recovery, my lady. I thought by now you are out and I couldn't even check on you.
Oh, the asthma is very bad.
Sure. Honorable members and officials, you hear that Lindy is in hospital, but we hope for the best for her. And Lindy is so strong to such an extent that she even logged in whilst she is in hospital in the bed. She doesn't want anything to fail. I'm sure on behalf of the portfolio committee, we wish you speedy recovery. And how we wish that you can get well soon. It's not nice for a person to be in hospital in any case. We have opened our meeting. Now what we need we are going to be assisted by Yoli, but Lindy is going to get in some few things that Yoli is unable to know and inform us about. Honorable members, I wish to welcome everyone in the meeting, especially during this month of the Women's International Women. You know, honorable members, it's very painful for us to always call these months and days, because it is just next week we are going to celebrate International Women's Day. But at the end of the day, we are still culprits of the gender-based violence. We have tried our best to make awareness. Now there's this thing that has come back, the one of the human trafficking. It frustrates that thing because you don't know even yourself as a person, won't you be get into that human trafficking? Because all these people that are doing these funny things of selling women in other countries, they behave as if they are good people. They come clean. Just a day before yesterday, I was watching from the TV. I was just panicking in Mpumalanga, where the 20 foreign nationals were caught there. And they were doing this business of selling people. You know, our kids at times, they do this business of selling their bodies as they, in fact, they take it as business, as they say. And you just can't say that your kid won't be in that situation, or someone who's close to you, or a family or a relative won't get into that trap. Because others, when you ask them, I sometimes stop and ask, why are you doing this? And why are you, especially in this small town, you will get them selling their bodies. And our husbands and our brothers, our uncles, you see them buying these things. You don't know what is their problem because they are having wives at home. So there's a lot that needs for us to pray for it. You know, it reminds me in the Bible when it was said, excuse me, yes, I think this is what they say. I don't understand when the young students, especially in the areas where you get university, you will get these kids loitering next to the beach, next to the hotels, all over, man, in corners. You don't understand, really. We understand that there is high rate of unemployment, but I look at the TV too. It was saying 0.2% is the decrease of the unemployment. How we wish that it can be 0.2% to women so that they stop this thing. Otherwise, I'm opening up this meeting also deeply, or in fact, I will say, not comfortable enough, frustrated of bad news. We are opening a day where we heard that Honorable Gillian Morencia passed on. She just had a sort of a, like a, she just fell when they were in the workshop. And when they tried to assist, and the paramedics arrived, they tried to resuscitate her, but it was already late for her. We don't know these things. If our member in the NCOP, and we got those bad news whilst we were in the process of the parliament yesterday, we wish to send a heartfelt condolences to the family of Gillian. We know that it is not, and Gillian is staying with us in Pelican. Yesterday we didn't have a choice, but immediately we requested the bus to stop at Gillian's house because kids were alone. It was so painful. So with those few words, honorable members, we are a family here. Fortunately for ourselves, all parties joined that visit to Gillian families. We didn't say, oh, no, when we are coming from DAU, we are coming from EFFU. We went there as a family, as colleagues, and we tried to comfort the kids and the family members there, and they were so grateful. So, comrades, let's hold one another's hand tightly and understand that you are a family. In this platform, we are a social development family. And let's hold one another's hand, because one day we will meet one another. There is no other day that you say you don't meet anyone. You are by yourself. You are compassionate and you are proud of yourself. No ways. There are times, difficult times, where you meet your colleagues, you meet your friends, you meet your sisters. We have tried this portfolio committee to create a humankind sort of, and a sisterhood family, I will say, affair. So I'm happy about that. Honorable members, let me not waste time because I'm not myself. I'm a little bit sort of not strong as before because of this thing that has happened to this call, this honorable member. But let's not waste time because we know that the buses arrived at half past 12. So by quarter past 12, we need to be ready and try to finish up and summarize and finalize our meeting. Honorable members, let's request Yuli to assist us by telling who is in the meeting, who is not in the meeting. He must also include the apologies.
Thank you
very much, Honorable.
Yuli,
over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not aware that there are two hands up, Honorable Masango and Honorable Iris. Yes.
Okay, I'll give them after you. Just tell us when I'm correct.
Okay, check. I think with the apologies, this is Lindy, because she's still in the platform, she'll assist with that. I don't have, but I have the names of the members in the meeting. I have you, Chairperson. I have Honorable Abrahams. I have Honorable Masango, Honorable Stock, Honorable Manganye, Honorable Bilankulu, Honorable Iris, Honorable Fanameve, Honorable Shongo. I did see the message from Honorable Iris that we must let Honorable Mare in, but there is no, she's not in the platform yet, Chair, so as to accept her. So I'm not sure what is going on from her side. But right now on the platform, I have 9 members, Chair, so we call it.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable. From can we get the names that are present? Is the Minister present? Is the DM present? Can we get, if they are present in the meeting, let me also acknowledge their presence and wish to welcome, and I'm happy for them to be part of our meetings sometimes. Over to you, Acting DG.
I don't see them, but in a minute, I'm members from the office. All right. Go ahead, Acting DG. Sorry, I didn't see your name.
I am Mikateko. Okay, sorry. Let me ask. Is it Department of Women or Social Development?
Okay. Thank you very much. And who are you?
I'm the Director General of the Department of Women. But when I heard them say Acting Director General, I was not sure whether they are referring to the Acting Director General of Social Development or of the Department of Women, because we've also been invited as the Department of Women.
Thank you very much for informing us that you have logged on. We also wish to welcome you. You are free in this meeting to express yourself and present what all you have brought for us. I was referring to the department LinkedIn.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to yourself and all Honorable members. Morning to the Minister as well, Deputy Minister, I think maybe Ian as well. Thank you. The department is here, and we have all the relevant colleagues who will respond to specific issues. We've also brought in SASA to respond to issues of grants for persons with disability. So we also have that compliment with us. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, LinkedIn. And as I have already acknowledged and welcome the Minister and the DM, can we give over to the Department of Women who are present? We have heard that the DG is present, but can I also get others that are present? Who else is present? Hello? Department of Women? Women Department? Yes?
Yes.
As already indicated, I'm Mekateko Maluleke from the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. I am joined here by Pravina Sukraj, Eli, and Ms. Phuthima Belebele. They are both from Disability. And Dineo Mako from MNE, and then from social, who will be presenting on gender-based violence, the programs that they provide for persons with disabilities. Shuki, thank you very much.
Thank you. You are all welcome, as I have already said. Thank you very much for your presence in our meeting. There were hands that were shown in the screen. The first one is Honorable Bridget Masango, followed by Honorable Aris. You know, the problem with your women's department is that your gadgets are not named. It's only numbers that are appearing. That's why we are unable to see you. And okay. I can see the hand of who's there now. Is it from the Department of Social Development or what? But I can see that hand. Let me first start by Honorable Masango. Will you please name your gadget number 60122 and also 129? Can you name your gadget? Because it makes us not to know exactly who is speaking and whom are we talking about. Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Masango.
Thank you so much, Chair. First, I would like to apologize.
Yes,
I
didn't.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to apologize that I cannot put my video on due to the load shedding that I'm sitting in at the moment, and the connectivity is not as strong as we would like to. But my raising my hand was just to, on behalf of the Democratic Alliance and the two members in the committee, to just convey a very deep condolences on the passing of Honorable Gillian, and just to say that you, the ANC family, her family, natural family and friends are in constant prayers. Yesterday I couldn't stop praying for her family and just about, you know, how she left us in such an amazing way, leaving us literally with the boots on. And so I just would like to convey our condolences, Chair, and thank the family of Honorable Gillian for having, you know, given us her to do all the work that she has done. And I also just want to say we wish Lindy speedy recovery. I personally didn't know she was in hospital, but we will be praying for her to be healed because she is playing an amazing role in the committee. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Masango. Honorable Aris.
Ja, baie dankie, goeiemôre, Chairperson. Ek dink ek wil, dit is ook die rede hoekom ek in my hand opgesteek het, ek wil namens ekonomiese vryheidsvegters vir die Gillian families alle sterkte toe wen met die ingang van Honorable Gillian en so ook vir die ANC familie. En ons vertrou dat die Here hulle in hierdie tyd sal versterk. Dit is 'n moeilike tyd, veral wanneer jy 'n moeder verloor. En mag die Here hulle omvou in hierdie tyd en alle sterkte vir die vir julle as haar kollegas. Baie dankie, Chairperson.
Baie dankie. Honorable members. Yeah, it's fine. Thank you ever so much. In my Berlin school. It's more than anything else to lose one of you. And, you know, when we look at the years when we had COVID, our honorable members were just dying like flies. now we are going back to that, but we don't want to curse anything. God has a purpose to do that. There's always a reason for doing it. Thank you so much, honorable members. Then, if it is the case, will you please write the agenda, Yuli, so that the minister, meanwhile, can get ready to give us a political overview?
All right, Chair. Okay. The agenda is flattered, Chair. I hope you can see it. Can the members see the agenda?
Yes, we can.
Yes, Yoli, we are able to see it.
Okay.
And we are on item number 4, where there is something that is saying let's adopt the agenda. But if there are any apologies from the department and from whoever, they can get into that space for now.
Okay, Chair, I just received apologies from Mrs. Lindy, the one that she had received. She received apology on behalf of Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability and the Minister of Department of Basic Education. They are both attending a cabinet meeting. She also received an apology from Deputy Minister from DBE, who has a prior arrangement, Chair. These are only apologies she received.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for those apologies, Yuli. But let me also do a special acknowledgement in terms of we are having the chairperson of Women and Youth with us, Honorable Kate Villambulu. So we are blessed by having her in our meetings and also as part of us. We know that she will also be able to participate and take a few things that she might as well think that she can wear two caps in this same meeting. So we accept that and understand. Thanks ever so much, Yuli. We are on item 4, as I said, adoption of the agenda. Then the agenda is has been flighted already. I'm not going to read it, but Yuli, can you try to briefing? Okay, it's the briefing by the Basic Education on Services and Programs for People with Disabilities, including children, and then there's also briefing by the department and also by the Department of Women. So that's the agenda. And then it will be committee deliberations or discussions. Meeting will be closed. We are not going to waste a lot of time yet. Let's give over to the minister as usual to do that just an overview. So over to you, minister.
Apologies, Chair, before you do that, can I just have an indication on the adoption of the agenda?
Okay. I sometimes do that after the minister has gone,
okay.
You know, because they are sometimes rushing back to the cabinet. But let's do it. It's fine because it's included the political overview. Why it's not on the agenda, but it's our norm and our standard that we have to give her when she is in the meeting. Can we adopt the...
I move for the... agenda, Chairperson.
Honorable Mangani.
I'm moving.
With the inclusion of the political overview by the minister. Any second, honorable members? Shongo, honorable Mplong.
Thank you very much, Chair. I second the move of the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much, honorable Chair. Let's proceed with the agenda as amended and inclusion of the political overview of the minister. Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I need to switch off the lights. There's a one that is flicking me. Sorry. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm not sure the light still is flicking, but I switched it off. Good morning to you, Honorable Chairperson, Nonkosi Mvana in particular, and good morning to all the other members of the Portfolio Committee who are here, including the Chairperson, Honorable Kate Vilankulu of Basic Education, the acting DG, Mthunu, senior managers and officials of the department of the DSD portfolio, but because we have other departments here too, I'm also saluting the rest of the officials who are from other departments. I see that I'm the only minister here, but I can assure you the other ministers are in cabinet at this point in time. I requested an apology just to make this presentation and then go. I want to, Chairperson, start from where you started this morning with respect to the great loss that both the Parliament, NCOP, the African National Congress, but most importantly the family, the loss that the family is facing today. And indeed, it is a very sad day as we wake up to the unexpected and upsetting news that our colleague and member of parliament, the Honorable Morisentia Gillion, is departed. I got the news yesterday in a meeting. My department called me to give me the sad news. Our memories of her selfless commitment in the service of all South Africans, especially the rural communities throughout the Western Cape, are intact. You will recall that in her role as the chairperson of the Select Committee on Health and Social Services, she really promoted meaningful cooperation with this portfolio committee, and we worked extremely well. The evening sky will be dimmer without her among us, and as we express our condolences to the family, loved ones, friends and comrades of the Honorable Morisentia Gillion, let us also thank them for the privilege of serving alongside her in the quest to improve the lives of all South Africans. And I do want to say to you, Chairperson, personally, I've lost a cheerleader, because if there's one thing she always did, whether it was a call to encourage me to even do better, whether it was after the presentations that we made, her appreciation of us being available and making the appreciation and making presentations, she really was a true and honest cheerleader who made me feel I needed to even do more and more than what I was doing through her appreciation. Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity to brief the departments, to debrief on the department's program and services for people with disabilities. Most importantly, it is today's presentation.
Recording in progress.
Today's presentation by the department is a demonstration of how the interventions of social development portfolio positively impacts people with disabilities as a distinct demographic group. When we were having a presentation before this presentation, because we need to always talk to each other, and I need to always feel that the department is going to be making a presentation that will be appreciated by the members, I was saying to the department, I wanted them to answer the question, if they close their ears and close their eyes and just visualize and think about those this particular demographic group of people. If you were to close your eyes and your ears and put yourselves in their shoes, would you be able to say that we are really giving the best service that they deserve? But also I was saying, do we push other departments that we are responsible for the well-being of our citizens? Do we push other departments well enough to make them appreciate that we are responsible?
Recording stopped.
We are responsible for social development, but everything else that is being done by all other departments can either have a positive or negative impact on the people that we serve and our services as a Department of Social Development. And I was saying we need to have it right here and in our heart if we want to really serve this group, but in general, the service to the people of South Africa. Early on, at the birth of our democracy, we all acknowledge that the majority of people with disabilities and their families throughout our communities were systematically being excluded from meaningfully benefiting from their social, civic, and economic rights, as well as improving their well-being. Even though the exclusion that disabled people are experiencing may have originated during colonial apartheid, present-day institutions are the biggest culprits to that, and we have to do everything we can to change that and change the state of these people. So one, we need to reinforce disabilities. We need to deal with reinforced disability stereotypes and thereby signaling their collective ignorance. To this end, among the so-called progressive
recording in progress,
understanding that the disabled people are patients who are in need of care. Two, patronize people with disabilities and further reenact regressive and disability exclusionary attitudes and practices with unparalleled impunity. This is particularly adverse where the civic and economic participation of people with disabilities are concerned, and left behind the achievement of the disability inclusivity targets that they set voluntarily. This is notwithstanding the fact that disability inclusivity targets are the only targets that have consistently been revised down by all institutions, despite the increasing availability of qualified and competent people with disabilities in any conceivable field. And therefore, as our society is reconstructing itself towards inclusive recovery on the backdrop of these services, of this series of health, social, economic, and climate change shocks that we have all been through, the narrow-mindedness that we witness when it comes to the isolation of people with disability as though they are lesser citizens is untenable. Consequently, pursuant of the sector's theme that nothing about us without us, I reminded the officials when we were having this briefing that in the 90s, before we even got into democracy, when we were developing the constitution and we're drafting the constitution, it is people with disability who stood up then and used this theme, nothing about us without us, which sometimes I think it's now being abused by others, whereas the original came from people with disabilities. The social development portfolio continuously strives to work together with disabled people's organizations in the responsible rendering of relevant and meaningful services to South Africa's people with disabilities. This sector level collaboration we spelled out and sustained through the formal partnership of principle. With this in mind, the department developed the draft policy on social development services to persons with disabilities, which will soon be gazetted for public comments. And I indicated to the department that I wasn't happy with the slow pace. And I was saying, while we are busy with that bureaucracy and this thing meandering through our bureaucracy, the people who are suffering are the people with disabilities. And I need us to speed up that process so that at least we can give hope to these people that we care and we are focused on developing policies and legislation that is relevant and that will enable us to help their situation. We developed this policy to ensure that meaningful improvement of the quality of lives of people with disabilities and their families. This policy is aligned with the 2015 White Paper on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Hence, the policy is a translation of the key tenets of the white paper into social development services and programs. This will be beneficial to our quest of addressing the systemic isolation, inequalities, and poverty that society is imposing on people with disabilities. The contribution of social development portfolio to the economic resilience, reconstruction, and recovery of South Africans with disabilities cannot be isolated to the monthly payment of the disability grant in aid and the care dependency grant to the growing number of South Africans who genuinely treasure these meaningful interventions by their government. In receiving the presentation by the department, we invite you to consider the economic productivity and growth prospects of nearly 300 protective workshops that are found throughout the country owing to the department's relentless investment in their sustained operation. Chairperson, people with disabilities are not living with their disabilities. Instead, they live with their families and in their communities. For this reason, the department renders a variety of direct services that are beneficial to them, including family and parental support programs, independent living programs, and respite care services for families of children and adults with disabilities. And as I say this, Chair, for me, it is about upscaling these programs. It is also about us as a department and all the other departments that are relevant to go looking and implementing this house-to-house, street-to-street, community-to-community so that we have a clear picture of the support that we give and the impact thereof of our services. Ultimately, the services and programs of the social development portfolio should be targeted at ending the indignity, hunger, destitution, unemployment, and poverty that disabled people experience. Pity will not end this for us. And I was yesterday, Honorable Chair, going through a document or a policy proposal that the department is putting on the table with regard to homelessness in South Africa. And I was thinking to myself as I was reading that document that part of what we don't find in many of our documents is about really true focus. As we talk about homelessness and the people who are out on the streets, what are we saying about those who are with disability? Because it's a hassle to be on the street. It's difficult to be on the street. Try and imagine what it is to be on the streets when actually you are a person living with disability. And I'm hoping that when that document comes through to the portfolio committee, you will also remember, honorable members, to look out for what we are saying about that issue in particular of homelessness. Honorable Chair, please allow me to call upon the department to render a presentation of the services and programs that speak to people with disabilities. And having made my presentation, I'll stay in a little bit, but I'm aware of what the department is presenting. But unfortunately, I will also then have to part, and I won't say that when I'm leaving, Chairperson, please accept that at some point I will leave the meeting. Thank you very much, and a very good morning to you all.
Thank you very much, Minister. With a political overview that put us on par in terms of knowing exactly where are we and where are we from and where are we going now. Now, honorable members, maybe LinkedIn sometime must also tell us whether the department has managed to reach the percentage that is expected in terms of having the accepted percentages of people with disabilities, so that we don't just preach it, and in fact we should be the one who implement it and be exemplary on that. Thanks ever so much, that political overview. You have been excused already. you will just sit out of the meeting when the time comes. Thanks ever so much. Then the next item on the agenda is the briefing. I know that you would like to hear your brief, your department on what is it that they are going to present, Minister. But unfortunately, the agenda has been accepted that we start with the Yes, okay. Can we give over their platform so that we can be able to present this as much as they can? We're not going to give you time, but you must make sure and be careful and be cautious of the time. Over to you.
Thanks, Chair. I think it's basic education coming in before us.
Is the basic education with us?
No.
You didn't hear that.
Yes, I saw. Bakola. Yeah,
Bakola, good morning, Chair. We are in the meeting.
Okay, Mui. All right, you are welcome.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to honorable members, honorable Minister of Social Development. It's always difficult to speak after ministers have spoken. I'm not going to be long. I'm out in the Eastern Cape monitoring the program of the replacement of Peatler trains by safe sanitation facilities. I've been sent here by the president, the minister, and the portfolio committee for basic education. But Mrs. Gaya has got a stable network. She'll help me to coordinate the team. We have put the presentation together in line with what the committee directed us to do. We're presenting this report at the time when we are reviewing White Paper 6, which is the policy directive to provide inclusive education in basic education. We had a difficult time on what to leave out and what to include in the presentation because there's so much that we wanted to share, Chair. But we'll do our best to keep within your time to share what we have put together. And Mr. Ngobo is going to lead in taking the committee through what we have prepared. Thank you very much, Chair, for allowing us and for the privilege. Mr. Ngobo, please proceed.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Ngobo, over to you. I'm happy that you are in the province, Mr. Mweli, because I heard the report that we are number last in terms of trying to improve the issue of pit latrines in Eastern Cape. So I wish you all the best, and how I wish that at least you will be able to assist in what is the crisis, because service delivery is the major thing. Thanks ever so much, Mr. Ngobo. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the Ministers, the Deputy Ministers, and the teachers and the colleagues. Honorable Chair, I'm going to be taking you through the presentation as my Director General has indicated. We've titled the presentation Every Learner Matters, and that's what provides the context for the programs that we are running. We can go to the next slide. The next slide will be showing the areas that we are going to be covering. Can I have the next slide, please? Can I have the next slide, please?
Chairperson, I don't know
who's controlling.
It's not me, Chair. I'm not flighting. It's Carlson. I made a call.
Sorry, Chair, is it possible that Mr. Mahata can be given a right to run the presentation? It will probably run much faster. I'm concerned about the time of the committee.
Sorry, did you miss
Mr. Mahata.
Mahata, okay. I'm looking for him.
Okay.
He's on the call.
Okay. Mr. Mahata, over to you. And please flight the presentation.
Sorry, Chair, I'm here to give him code, right? I'm just looking for his name here.
I'm finding one.
Maybe he's using his first name? Or is it Mahata, his first name, sir? Oh, here we go.
Buhari Mahata.
I got it.
He's on call.
Yes, I just saw
you.
Yes. Okay, he's
now
a
call.
Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Mahata.
Chair, I think Mr. Mahata is having a problem. Can I be given the right Jabulani Ngobo to share?
Okay, welcome back, Mr. Ngobo. Over to you. They only were whenever that.
Yes, the right.
We have the right now, Mr. Mahata.
Okay.
Okay. Yes, Chair. Send the bonus call in Lam.
Yes. Yes. That is the outline for the presentation. We'll be covering quite a range of issues, the policy obligations in respect of our work in terms of the programs and services for children with disabilities. We'll also be sharing the strategic interventions, and we'll also provide a short glimpse in terms of the challenges and mitigation strategies, and then we'll share the key priorities for the coming period. That is the purpose of the presentation, Chair, to present to the Portfolio Committee the report on the programs and services for children with disabilities. Chair, the African Children's Charter lifts the importance of education in enhancing children's full potential, while also asserting that the lack of education is likely to result in poverty and exclusion. Chair, this means that the right to education is one of the most important rights for all the children, including the children with disabilities. Therefore, Chair, the Article 24 of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities guarantees the respect and protection of the right of children with disabilities to equitable quality education. Therefore, Chair, this directly impacts the successful enjoyment of all the other rights. Therefore, the right to education provides access to other rights in terms of the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Chair, I'm now providing the strategic direction that guides us, and we've extracted from Chapter 9 of the National Development Plan, which provides that inclusive education provides for inclusive education that enables everyone to participate effectively in a free society, and refers to education that provides knowledge and skills that people with disabilities can use to exercise their rights to access their rights to work and to live independently and to participate in the cultural life of their own communities, raise families, and have access to quality education. And all of this, Chair, will help South Africa to meet its employment targets in the long run. Chair, that's the Constitution, and elevating the Constitution as the overarching legislation and a template where we draw our conceptual framework.
Chair, that provides the how the sector relates, how the work of the plan of the sector relates to the SDGs and other plans. You see this, there is a sector plan, action plan 2019 towards realization of schooling 2030, the five-year strategic plans, the medium-term strategic framework, and these are the mandates that guide the work, Chair, that the sector does. Chair, our work is also located within the Sustainable Development Goals, specifically SDG 4, which speaks to quality education. And Chair, the sector plan provides for 27 goals, and goal 26 being the goal that refers specifically to inclusive education. Therefore, in this sector plan, we have goal 13 and goal 1 to 13, which speaks to the improvement of learning outcomes. The various targets are indicated there. And goal 14 to 27 supports the work that we do in terms of
Can you try and enlarge your slide so as to be visible?
I'm trying to find this thing.
I won't be able to reach everything from my eyes, but...
Maybe what might be useful is for Mr. Ngoba to go through what is in small inscription on the PowerPoint, because it might be difficult to enlarge it more than what it is. But
Funela omnye phaya office nokanye kule ndawo kule Mr. Ngobo ancedise wethu. Yeke,
Nanzo.
Yeke, Nkosi, siyabulela.
All right.
Continue ke Mr. Ngobo. Continue Mr. Ngobo.
Yes, Chair. I'm back, Chair. I was muted. Chair, I'm now on the slide on the basic education sector priorities. Those are the priorities: early childhood development, reading, teacher quality and efficiency, social cohesion, infrastructure, and pro-poor and ELSEN. And ELSEN refers to the learners with special educational needs. I made reference to goal 26, which states that the sector will work towards the increasing the number of schools that effectively implement inclusive education. And this is a basic education priority, Chair. And Chair, in 2001, South Africa adopted inclusive education, and this was adopted as a mechanism for ensuring that everyone was able to participate and contribute effectively to their life and that of their community and society in large. Since then, significant progress has been made in deploying inclusive education as a mechanism for ensuring access to education for all learners, especially children with disabilities. However, Chair, it's important to indicate that challenges and gaps have remained, and these require specific interventions to ensure that we can reach full inclusion. It is important then to consolidate the gains and then address the challenges that have surfaced over the years. The policy on inclusive education, which is White Paper 6, says particular obligations that we need to ensure the implementation thereof if the inclusive education system is going to be built. One of the first one is the qualitative improvement and conversion of special schools, the process of screening, identification, assessing and supporting learners, mobilization of out-of-school children with disabilities and youth to ensure that all of them are in schools, designation and convention and resourcing of full service schools, the establishment and strengthening of district-based support teams to provide a coordinated professional support service, but also ensuring that learning difficulties are not only perceived as residing within the learner, but also within the various aspects, but also establishing the institutional level support teams and whose primary function would be to put in place properly coordinated learner and educator support services. The last one was that we needed to launch a national advocacy and information program to communicate these policy proposals, including the rights and responsibilities and obligations in terms of the implementation. The guidelines provide the social justice principles that we use as a sector. You will see that some of them are indicated in black and some of them in red. Those that are indicated in red are those that we still have work to do in terms of ensuring that they become realized within the system. And those that are indicated in black are those that we see we've made significant progress, and the challenges that relate to them has been minimized. This is the slide that shows you what we think is the 21st century learner, and it's important to indicate that this includes learners with disabilities. So these are the skills that will be required for a child to participate actively within the 21st century: an engaged thinker, an entrepreneurial spirit. They will need to have done the subjects, specific subjects. They will need to have skills around collaboration and leadership, creativity and innovation. So in other words, this slide shows how we are forward thinking in terms of inclusive education, but also the rights and access to the kind of education that will lead to this kind of learner. So I'm now taking you through the strategic interventions that we are using to build an inclusive education and training system. So the first one is around the improvement of access. So you see that from the slides, we are indicating the number of special schools comparing 2 years. 2002 and 2022. 2002, for instance, we had 295 special schools, and up to 2022, we had 435 public special schools and 54 independent special schools, giving us 489. In the special schools, we had 64,000 learners in 2002. Now we're standing at 137,483. It is important to indicate that we also introduced what is called full service schools, which provide moderate support to learners who require not high levels of support. We're standing at 832 full service schools at the moment. We also have, it is important to also indicate that learners with disabilities are not only in special schools, but they are also in public ordinary schools. We were in 2002 sitting at 77,000, and now we are sitting at 121,461. And we also have children with disabilities in special care centers, community-based special care centers. And we have just over 7,000 of those learners. And it is important to indicate that this project started around 2017. And that's why we have not indicated the figures there. This provides a breakdown per province in terms of the learners in special schools. You will see that Gauteng has the largest at 58,305. Then we have Western Cape at 20,548, followed by KwaZulu-Natal. And the province with the lowest number is obviously Northern Cape. So that provides the breakdown of the numbers as indicated in the previous slide. That slide provides the distribution of special schools across the country. You will see that in the Northern Cape you have very few, but we'll see that most of them are clustered in Gauteng and Western Cape. So you'll see that a number of special schools are in those two provinces. That slide provides you with the numbers of learners with disabilities in public ordinary schools, your so-called mainstream schools. You will see that Gauteng leads in terms of that, followed by Free State, then followed by Eastern Cape. So this is the breakdown share of learners with disabilities in public ordinary schools per province. Okay, let me move to access to education for learners 5 to 6 year old with disabilities and those without disabilities. Those with disabilities indicated in yellow, and those without disabilities indicated in green. You will see, Chair, that we are making progress there because with those that do not have disability, we're sitting just above 90%, and we're sitting just above just close to approximately 80% in terms of those with disabilities for 5 to 6 year olds. Chair, if I move to 7 to 15 year olds, you will see that we have reached over about 98% of learners without disabilities are already in school. But remember that this is a age range where attendance is compulsory. So in terms of that, the learners without disabilities are in school. But then if you look at the learners with disabilities, Chair, you will see that they still work to do. There are some of those that are still not accessing education, and this is an area, Chair, that I will indicate in my following slides that we are also looking at. You will see, Chair, that we've got fewer learners with disabilities and without disabilities within the age range 16 to 18. This is because this age range falls outside of school attendance, Chair. So you will see that we don't have big numbers in terms of this learners. Now, Chair, I'm taking you through the key interventions to improve equitable access to basic education. Chair, I'm starting with the funding for special schools. You will see that we fund special schools per the province, depending on the number of learners that they have. You will see that we have the approved budgets, and in some instances, like in the Eastern Cape, Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, we had some adjustments totaling up to 650. Then we had the adjusted budget there. But then if you look at the expenditure, you will see that we are sitting at 67.7 as at December 22. There has been progress that has been made in this regard. We are sitting at a different figure in terms of the provinces. But we couldn't share that information because this information still needs to be officialized by the provinces. But we are aware that we are sitting at a percentage higher than that. But we do have concerns for some of the provinces that have not spent adequately. But as I'm indicating, there's been shifts from this official figure that we have. We also have one of our interventions as early identification and intervention. In terms of this, the National Development Plan sets quality early childhood development as a priority for the country to improve the quality of education and the long-term prospects of our future generations. Chair, therefore, the Department of Basic Education then promulgated the policy on screening, identification, and assessment to get this thing done. The purpose of the policy is to provide a policy framework for the standardization of the procedures to identify, assess, and provide programs for all learners who require additional support. Chair, in terms of numbers...
If you are able to look at your slides that are 100 and something and look at the piece that you are presenting, we are not going to make it for the time. If you are able to summarize other slides in one sentence, it will be the best for us. But I heard your DG saying that there's a lot that she, in fact, that you need to share with us. And you wanted to share more than you have shared right now. So can I just caution you about time and try because we do have them in front of us.
Chairperson.
Hello.
They're making noise, those people who are speaking. We can't even hardly hear what they're saying.
Who
is she? I can't see them because...
Who is she?
No, there are two. It's not the one.
Thank you very much. Those that have mistakenly opened their videos and mics, please can they switch off? In mute. Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Ngobo.
Thank you very much. This slide shows you the numbers in terms of training. We've trained 178,757 teachers, 10,786 officials since 2015, and in 2020 we began training ECD practitioners Thank you, Chair. Chair, we started in 2020 to train ECD practitioners to strengthen our efforts around early identification and intervention. So far, we've trained 8,727 ECD practitioners. Chair, let me move to the next slide. Chair, the next slide shows you the areas that we monitor in terms of implementation, because we've moved from training to implementation. We're just mopping up in terms of training. So, Chair, those are the areas. And Chair, this slide is showing the progress that we've made in terms of those areas. 444,586 screened learners identified as experiencing barriers of just over 104,000, which indicates that there is not a lot of them, because we've got about 25% of learners experiencing barriers. But Chair, I would like to point out the fact that most of those cases, if you look at the next bullet, are resolved at school. In other words, these learners are able to receive support in schools. But Chair, I would also like to indicate that in terms of referrals and retaining the learners in schools, you will see that the figure for learners who are retained, in other words, who are supported in their own schools, we've got 21,699, which means that we only refer just about a third to other schools, which means that there is some capacity in the original school of these learners. Chair, let me move to the training of teachers in specialized areas. Teacher development has become one of the key issues of making sure that that teachers can teach inclusively to make sure that learners do not fall behind. Chair, I will move straight to the numbers so that I indicate those numbers. Chair, I'm showing you the numbers that we have that we have already trained. We have just over 3,000 that we have that we trained in 2020 because of the COVID, but you'll see that number increased to over 16,000 in 2021. So we're doing very well in terms of that. But also, Chair, we've initiated courses for teachers in partnership with the Department of Higher Education. We have there, Chair, on that slide, the universities that specialize in specific areas of disability. For instance, with the University of Witwatersrand specializes on deaf and hard of hearing causes, visually impaired, University of Pretoria, and causes around neurodevelopmental conditions, University of Western Cape and University of Johannesburg. But we also have a bursary scheme, Chair, that is funding, especially right now, teachers that are taking South African Sign Language. But it's also we're also working towards making sure that Funzifuzal Shara funds all the teachers who take courses in the specialized areas that we have identified as a department. But here we also have an initiative called Teaching for All, and this initiative aims at strengthening the capacity of pre-service and in-service teachers to respond effectively to the needs of learners. Currently, this project is piloted in the Western Cape, and the feedback that we are receiving is very positive. Teachers are benefiting from this. Chair, let me move to the next one, the designation of full service schools. Full service schools provide a range of services, but they only provide for moderate support to those learners who require such. The white paper says that we had to designate 500 schools in 30 education districts. Chair, I must indicate that we have designated 813, as you will see in the next slide. But Chair, we had issues around the Auditor General in terms of the functionality of full service schools, and we had to respond. And Chair, this is how we have responded to the recommendations. We have assessed 656 of the 813 schools, and we have provided them with about 186 support programs. And also, as part of our intervention, 598 full service schools have been provided with appropriate and proper toilets. And out of the 656 that we have assessed, 267 full service schools are providing outreach services to other schools around them. And that slide provides you with the number of full service schools per province. You will see that in some of the province we have I mean, like if you look at Northwest, we have 230, but if you look at Gauteng, you have 448. And I must indicate, Chair, that this work has resource implications, and it's important for provinces to tread carefully in terms of how they designate. And that is the reason that you will see that there are differences in numbers. Chair, that slide shows you the distribution of full service schools around the country. Chair, I'm now going into what we've done to strengthen the capacity of special schools. The white paper on inclusive education says that the capacity of the special schools will be strengthened. And this is how we've done it. We've used the white paper on e-education to make sure that we undertake particular activities to strengthen the capacity. And one of them was around the provision of assistive devices, the ICTs and connectivity through the universal service access obligations with the telecom operators. And here I've got a slide that involves the four telecom operators in the country, and it indicates the number of schools that each one of them was given. You will see that in the slide, Vodacom has connected all the special schools that were given to them. And Cell C has been struggling, and we've been in touch with ICASA, and ICASA is working with them to make sure that they can fulfill their obligations. But our second program is that of designating special schools as resource centers, that is developing them as resource centers. We are presenting in this slide the percentage of special schools that have been designated as resource centers in the province. You will see that Northern Cape has designated all of them as resource centers. They've got quite few, because I think they've got about four, and that is they've got about eight, and that they have designated all of them. But the other provinces will have more special schools than Northern Cape. This one also has resource implications, and it's important to develop the capacity of the special schools that are designated to ensure that they can provide outreach services. So, but Chair, that is how it stands at the moment. Chair, we have also provided learning and teaching support materials for learners with disabilities. And in 2021, we purchased over 26 master copies of Braille and large print from Pioneer Printers and Blind SSA. And what we did was that we wanted to make sure that the high price that was being paid by the provinces was moderated. In other words, when we purchased this, then it meant that provinces did not have to buy these master copies individually. And these were then uploaded to our DBE website for schools to download and or reproduce or print for learners with disabilities. But on top of that, we also forwarded the link to the provinces for them to be able to work with the school. That slide shows you the work that you've done in terms of providing Braille workbooks. And that is a list of workbooks that we have converted to Braille. But also, Chair, it's important to say that the minister has established in 2017 a ministerial advisory committee to advise on the key issues relating to learners with visual impairment. And part of that was identifying the challenges and advising on the mediation and best practices, advising on ongoing development and printing and delivery of material, advising on training programs, and so on. The following slides will then show you what we've provided for each of the schools for the blind. Chair, I'm not going to sit on this because the honourable members have them. But that indicates what we have provided for each of the 23 schools for the blind across the country. Chair, I'm now moving on to the performance of learners with disabilities in the National Senior Certificate. In terms of the South African Sign Language, the numbers have increased. It started in 2019. It started offering it at grade 12 in 2019. When in 2022, we had 210 learners, and 210 is still small, Chair. But we are working towards making sure that the number of learners who are deaf who can participate in the NSC increases. That slide provides the pass percentage, the number of learners who pass the South African Sign Language. We are able to obtain 77.1% of the learners who are taking the South African Sign Language at grade 12. That slide shows you the enrollment of learners with disabilities, and it compares 2021 and 2022. you will see that there has been some decrease in certain instances that are indicated in red, but we have overall seen an increase of learners with disabilities taking the NSC. Okay, I'm now moving towards the concessions and accommodations. We provide concessions and accommodations to make sure that learners can perform on par with the learners who do not have disability. That slide provides the breakdown of the concessions that are in the different provinces. And it also provides the types of concessions that have been awarded. That slide provides the achievement for 2021. You will see, Chair, that we were in 2021, we're sitting at 80.8% in terms of the past percentage, those that achieved. But in terms of numbers, the number that grew, the NSC in terms of, in 2021 was 2,397. Chair, I'm now looking at 2022. Chair, you will see that there is a slight drop. There is a drop in the number of learners who participated, who wrote in 2022. But Chair, I must indicate that this is not actually a drop. This number that is reflected here shows the number of learners who took the NSC. So that drop actually is a good thing because it shows that almost half of the learners took 7 subjects instead of 5 subjects. So this slide is only showing that learners took the endorsed NSC, which is 5 subjects, but that a large number of them are now taking 7 subjects in matric, which is good because it allows them entry into. Chair, I'm now going to fly through the programs for learners with intellectual disability. That slide shows you the learning program that we've developed specifically for learners with intellectual disability. We have done this because we've realized, and literature shows us, that learners with intellectual disability are often marginalized. So we've got 3 programs that we've developed for these learners. The first one is for learners with profound intellectual disability. Then for learners with severe intellectual disability, we've got 21 occupational subjects. There it runs from grade R to grade 6. And then we have for learners with mild intellectual disability, where we have 26 subjects. Chair, the following slides then provide the detail in terms of what we have done in terms of those programs. In terms of the support for learners with profound intellectual disability, we have appointed teams that are part of the provinces across the country. That slide shows you the numbers of teams and the numbers of members that we have appointed across the country. Each of these teams have a provincial grant manager. You'll see that there are 2 vacancies there, one for Free State and one in the Western Cape. One in the Western Cape, the grant manager got sick, and the one in Free State, the grant manager resigned, and the provinces are working at filling those. But all in all, the other provinces have appointed. Then this slide shows you the number of special care centers, the number of caregivers, and the number of learners in special care centers. It shows you the number of learners with profound intellectual disability, severe intellectual disability, mild to moderate intellectual disability, and we have found that there are also learners in special schools with no intellectual disability. And also learners that were still, because they keep on coming and that still have to be assessed. Chair, I must indicate that there is a plan to make sure that all of these learners are placed in school. So that's the number that we have. But I think the good thing is that now we can confidently say this is how many learners we have that are out that are out of school and need place in schools. Yeah, that slide provides you with the number in the numbers in terms of the training of care, of the teams, caregivers, teachers, officials, and the therapists. So it's important to indicate that we've also provided outreach services for learners in special care centers. We're sitting at 504 psychoeducational assessments, children provided with therapeutic interventions, 4,233. If you go to special care centers provided with LTSM, 426 learners provided with assistive devices, we're sitting at 368. But I must indicate that we had a look yesterday to see individually how many assistive devices we have provided. And we found that we've provided to over a thousand individual assistive devices for learners in special care centers. Chair, this slide provides you with the expenditure for 2022-23 as at the 31st of January 2023 in terms of the allocations that we give to the provinces. You will see that at the end of January, we're sitting at 72.03%. I must indicate that, Chair, we've improved on this because in the last meeting that the DG had with the provinces, there was an indication that we have improved. All that we require, that we are waiting for now, is formal communication from the provinces. But we are quite confident that this percentage is going to reflect that we have spent significantly in terms of this allocation. Chair, that slide then provides you with the MTEF allocation for the three financial years. The last financial year sitting at 284,311,000. So that indicates what the MTEF state allocation will look like. One of the issues was that we must pay directly to special care centers. Chair, I want to indicate that because we don't have an enabling legislation, we haven't been able to deposit funds directly to special care centers. But what we have done is we have provided services as we indicate in this. We've also developed subjects for learners with severe intellectual disabilities, and these are piloted in schools of kids. So this provides the list of the subjects, and we are quite confident and we're quite happy that teachers have indicated that they welcome the curriculum and that the curriculum addresses some of the issues that they had with the curriculum. But Chair, I must also indicate that there are challenges around the shortage of qualified teachers, that some of the schools are using makeshift spaces as workshops, and that the curriculum will require a huge injection. Chair, we also have what is called the three-stream model, which was initiated to make sure that there is a curriculum option for learners with disabilities, particularly those with mild to moderate intellectual disability. We also have subjects for them, and these are the subjects for 24 subjects, and we are awaiting Umalusi to approve the subjects. We've gone through all the necessary processes. And these are some of the activities that we have completed, Chair, with regards to that curriculum. But Chair, in terms of the infrastructure, you will see that the number of special schools served with learner transport have increased from 69 to 209 in 2022, and the number of learners with disabilities benefiting from scholar transport have increased from 12,923 in 2018-19 to 28,418 in 2022. Chair, that provides a breakdown of the previous slides in terms of the provinces. I'm not going to dwell in it because of time. That slide indicates the capital projects. We've got 91 infrastructure projects in special schools in 2023. And of these, 20 have already progressed to completion and 22 are in construction. So this slide therefore shows you the stages in which these 91 projects are. Okay, we also have the minimum norms and standards for infrastructure, and that slide indicates that. And under the ACD program, with 1,052 schools have been served with appropriate sanitation. And Chair, the other intervention that we have initiated is that of stakeholder engagement. In 2021, we held a national summit on disability, which included over 150 persons, including the members of the presidential working group, organizations representing persons with disabilities, specialist inclusive education, and provincial education departments. And this summit, Chair, made specific recommendations which the department is responding to. But, Chair, I must indicate that the Director General has also initiated regular meetings with disability and other stakeholders, disability sector and other stakeholders, to open a space for reporting and engaging on key issues. And the next bullet shows you the dates on which these meetings have been held. 13 September 2021, and we had two in 2022. Chair, it is important to indicate that the intention is to regularize these meetings annually, at least have two meetings in a year. Chair, we've also strengthened our oversight mechanisms in terms of ensuring that we monitor and pay oversight over the implementation of inclusive education. So the slides that are going to follow now are showing you how we have strengthened our oversight mechanisms to ensure that that inclusive education is implemented. The intention is to make sure that learners with disabilities are well taken quick care of, because we know that inclusive education is a mechanism that was developed for that purpose, to make sure that all learners with disabilities are schooled. So we look at the four, in terms of the oversight, we look at our oversight exercise. We have stratified schools according to type. Bullet 2 is showing that. And there are presentations made at provincial level, the district, and then the school. Then we have a debriefing session. And that is that slide is showing you the number of schools that we have visited over the period, showing 90 institutions that we have visited. Okay, I'm now going through the challenges and mitigations. The conditional grant on learners with severe to profound intellectual disability has not adequately addressed the placement of learners. So what we have done is that we have issued a circular to provincial education departments to guide in respect of the placement of learners from special care centers. But we've also, as we have seen, strengthened oversight and support mechanisms to ensure efficiency. The other area is that of inadequate support to learners with experience in barriers, including learners with disabilities. We are strengthening district-based support, and also we are strengthening the training of teachers in specialized areas to make sure that they can support these learners that have been identified as having barriers, as experiencing barriers to learning. But we've also strengthened the capacity of special schools, district and school-based support teams, including school management teams. The other area, Chair, is around access to curriculum offering. You will see that I've just indicated that we have got now the occupational curriculum, and once Maluse has approved, we will then engage in rigorous implementation. But also, we strengthen the capacity of schools to take more learners pursuing the occupational route, but also to collaborate with the Department of Higher Education to ensure that we have appropriate teachers to take this curriculum forward. But also we've observed that there is an increasing incidence of disability, especially the autism spectrum disorder. Chair, we think that the way to go with this would be to collaborate with the Department of Health and other relevant government departments to investigate and respond to this prevalence, because it's something that we are noticing, and we think it requires our attention to make sure that there is an appropriate response. Okay, the other issue is around the understanding of inclusive education as a mechanism to improve access to quality education for all. We think that it's important for us to mainstream the implementation of inclusive education to strengthen the basic education rather than the full service schools and special schools. Chair, we are also operating within a constrained fiscal environment, which is impacting on program delivery, monitoring, and support. Chair, we believe that we need to strengthen our efforts to address the inefficiencies in the system, to ensure maximum utilization of available resources, and also to explore alternative sources and models of resourcing. The other issue, Chair, is around infrastructure provisioning. We are not where we want to be, and we think that we need to consolidate the current provisioning and explore alternative models to expand the provisioning. And the other one is around collaboration with our stakeholders and other government departments. We seek to consolidate this collaboration and partnerships with key stakeholders in the sector to ensure that our engagements are regularized, as I indicated in the previous slide. Chair, the following slide then provides the key priorities. Chair, I'm not going to go through them because they are. The Department of Basic Education is recommending that the portfolio committee discusses and considers the report on the programs and services for children with disabilities. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think we have to note what we would like to ask and allow the other presentation to continue, and then we note the questions. How is that, honorable members? Because I've also got a question to ask. Do you agree?
Yes.
Okay.
Chair, I think we can proceed to the other presentation and discuss them all together.
Yes. Can we give for the movement department? The women's department. Are you women's department?
We're not, Chair, but I thought we were named.
I just use my discretion to say that you must follow, you must be the last one.
No problem, Chair. Thank you.
Over to you, Mamu. I can't remember, you said you are Mamu Ban. Mamu Kate Vilangul, Honorable Kate.
It's DG Mikateko, Chairperson.
Yes, thank you very much for reminding me. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the Chair and all the honorable members that are here, my colleagues, and all the officials. Thank you very much for inviting us. And I think after the presentation of the Department of Basic Education, it becomes difficult to present. It was a very good presentation. And I would like to indicate that we need to work with basic education on issues of disability. The Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities mandate is to regulate the socio-economic empowerment and participation of women, youth and persons with disabilities. No, if someone will present, I'm just opening up. The department is to regulate the socioeconomic empowerment and participation of women, youth, and persons with disabilities. It was established in order to develop strategies and mechanisms to disrupt the status quo in which women, youth, and persons with disabilities bear a feminine face. Therefore, at the center of the department's mandate is the provision of strategic guidance and leadership on women, youth,
and persons with disabilities empowerment and to promote gender equality within all those sectors. There are many current strategic interventions that the department is implementing, and our strategies, they focus on women, youth, and persons with disabilities. Because if you can't separate each, when you look at women, they're young women, they're women with disabilities. When you look at young persons, they are young females, and they are young females with disabilities. When you look at persons with disabilities, they are females, they are males, they are young people. So our policies apply to all. The department has a national framework for women's empowerment and gender equality, which was approved by cabinet in 2000. However, that policy is being reviewed now. The review will also incorporate our current international obligations like your Africa Agenda 2063 and the SDGs, especially Goal 5, and to ensure that Goal 5 is mainstreamed in all other goals. Cabinet approved positive planning, budgeting, monitoring and evaluation, and auditing framework, which guides all government departments how to mainstream budget or how to mainstream women, youth, and persons with disabilities into budgets. Also, the department, in order to ensure that women, youth, and persons with disabilities are mainstreamed in the entire government program, the department analyzes departmental draft strategic plans and APP annually. We do that in collaboration with DPME, and feedback is provided where gaps are noted to departments to ensure that they mainstream women, youth, and persons with disabilities. This year, because our department is structured and resource to fail, we were not able to do provinces and municipalities, so we're going to issue a tender, a request for proposal, where we will appoint a service provider who do all provincial APPs and municipality IDPs to audit their APPs and strategic plan to see if they're mainstreaming women, youth, and persons with disabilities. The National Treasury, in partnership with the department and the IMF, has developed a directive on gender responsive budgeting, taking from the broader a policy framework that I spoke about, the gender responsive planning, budgeting, monitoring and evaluation, audit and auditing framework. So they just took the budgeting because their role is budgeting. And that will assist because the National Treasury has got peace. So once the National Treasury requires all government departments to mainstream gender responsive budgeting, government departments will do that because they will not get the budget when they are not when they have not done that. Also, we're working with the Auditor General because many government departments, despite the fact that we present at the digital clusters, we write to them, they still don't comply. So we're busy talking with the Auditor General. The National Strategic Plan, Gender Responsive Planning, Budgeting, Monitoring, and Mainstreaming of Women, Youth, and Persons with Disabilities will be items that the Auditor General will audit government departments. In that way, we'll be able to get compliance because now as a department, we don't have teeth to bite. However, when we involve the Auditor General, surely government departments will participate. But also, we're not just saying government departments must implement without us doing the training. They will present about the training, but just to say we're working with the National School of Government, where it's providing training on gender mainstreaming and on gender budgeting. The department also has developed a gender, youth, and disability framework, we call it GEYOD, which allows for the facilitation of regular meetings with different sectors. We meet with the disability sector, we meet with youth sector, we meet with women's sector. But also we are collaborating with HSRC to conduct research on gender mainstreaming, because sometimes the reports that you get can give you an impression that you're mainstreaming, and yet in reality, mainstreaming is not happening. A lot is happening. However, I think the presenters from the department will present. One thing that I've forgotten was the fact that Minister and I met with Minister of Finance, where we requested him that the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities should be in the governance cluster, not in the social cluster, because if we're in the governance cluster, then we sit in MTEC. The MTEC functional group, its responsibility is to ensure that the budgets are aligned to the priorities of government. So in that way, we'll be able to make sure that women, youth, and persons with disabilities, because they are priority of government, are incorporated. So budgets will not be approved if they have not made sure that they have provided appropriately or they've integrated women, youth, and persons with disabilities. With that, Chair, I would like to request Dr. Pravin Sukraj Ali to do the presentation. And Chair, as indicated, we have four different presentations, because we have the one that focuses on gender-based violence is in another unit, so they will present. Thank you.
DG, I think it's Kuti that will start. I see it's her slides that are appearing first on the presentation.
Kuti.
Okay, thank you, DG.
Hello. Yes. And who are you? We can't even see you. We encourage one to put on the okay.
Okay, and then Ms. Kuti Mabelebele will present now.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you, DG, and thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to all the participants and the honorable members that are in the meeting today. I hope my screen is visible.
You are, and then you can switch it off so that the slides can be enlarged.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Yes, thank you very much, and for the honor to be able to come and present to this portfolio committee in terms of what we are set up to do in the Rights of Persons with Disabilities branch, which has got two chief directorates, the chief directorate on advocacy and mainstreaming and one on the governance and compliance. I think before I go into the presentation, it's important, Chair and members, that I also bring to attention the fact that the Rights of Persons with Disabilities branch, as you may be aware, was once part of the Department of Social Development, and with the national reorganization of reconfiguration of government 3 years ago, then the department, the Rights of Persons with Disabilities branch was then retransferred to the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. Chairperson, in terms of the background and members, we derive our mandate from the Constitution, from the INDS White Paper on the Integrated National Disability Strategy of 1997, the 2000 PEPUDA, which was passed, but also the 2007 ratification of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which is the UNCRPD, and in 2012, the National Development Plan, and then also the initial council report, which we have deposited to the UNCRDP in 2014, and the adoption of the SDGs. Next slide. Our legislative mandate, as I indicated, continues where we, because as a specific to RPD, Rights of Persons with Disabilities, we have the Constitution, the UNCRPD, and the AU Protocol. And I must say that, Chairperson, as an update, that the AU Protocol has been signed off by also the Minister of International Relations and will since be deposited at the AU
Parliament soonest in terms of the communication that we have received. So the AU protocol also forms part of the legislative mandate that we have. But on top of that, we have the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities and the implementation matrix. And then we have since from the on the basis of the white paper's priorities, developed four frameworks on reasonable accommodation, universal design and access, and the awareness raising and self-representation. And these frameworks have since been gazetted and published for implementation. I've just noted on the chat that perhaps members have not had the portfolio I'm presenting from. I'm within the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities in the Rights of Persons with Disabilities branch under Advocacy and Mainstreaming as the Chief Director. Thank you. Next slide. Now, the key document, policy document that we have that drives our mandate is the white paper. And we are looking at the 9 strategic pillars of the white paper, the first one being to remove the barriers to access and participation, protection of the rights of persons with disabilities at risk of experiencing compounded marginalization, supporting sustainable integrated community life, promoting and supporting the empowerment of persons with disabilities, reducing the economic vulnerability and releasing human capital, and the strategic pillar number 6 being strengthening the representative voice of persons with disabilities, 7 building a disability equitable state machinery, and promoting international cooperation, monitoring and evaluation. A lot of work has gone into ensuring that the 9 strategic pillars of the white paper are fulfilled in terms of our mandate of regulating the socioeconomic empowerment of persons with disabilities. And there's a lot mindful of time, but there's a lot that, as I present, will be touching on the 9 strategic pillars. But I want to indicate that key to us in this year, and that we have managed to actually achieve, was that when we developed the 4 frameworks on the universal design and access, and the framework on reasonable accommodation, and the framework on the awareness raising, and the framework on self-representation, we were actually developing frameworks to guide duty bearers. And by duty bearers, I mean those that are in the private sector and in the public sector, in terms of how to best begin to implement effectively and effectually for persons with disabilities. And this was on the basis of the compliance reports that we have been, and the monitoring and evaluation reports that we have been since the white paper was instituted, have been utilizing to monitor progress in terms of the rights of persons with disabilities in government. And we realize that there are gaps and there are challenges, and most of those gaps lies in the effectiveness of service delivery for persons with disabilities. And therefore, we developed those 4 frameworks to actually ensure that duty bearers know exactly their rights, and also the rights holders know actually their rights and responsibilities, and guide them in terms of making sure that they develop implementation plans that are mainstreamed in service delivery programs of departments. As DG has indicated when she started, she said that we have realized that in a lot of times people talk mainstreaming, but the actual mainstreaming is not, from our assessment and analysis, the actual mainstreaming is not really taking place in departments. And it is for this reason that we strengthened the white paper by developing those particular frameworks. Those frameworks were widely consulted, and consulted through all the structures. Cabinet has approved them, and hence I've indicated that we have since published and gazetted them, so that all duty bearers in the private and public sector know exactly how to go about implementing for persons with disabilities. We are not limited to the 4 frameworks, but we picked the 4, looking at the 9 strategic pillars of the white paper to address the different pillars that are there, especially the representative voice of persons with disabilities, nothing about us without us, but also in order to address removing barriers of access and participation, the awareness raising about the different disabilities, and also the universal design and access framework talks to that. And then also in terms of building a disability equitable state machinery, the reasonable accommodation
policy talks to that. But over and above that, I think when we go into the governance and compliance presentation, you will see an indication in terms of how we are faring and what other processes we instituted to ensure that we enable the state machinery to begin to respond to persons with disabilities. I must indicate that our work, I think let's go to the next slide. Our work is limited by the fact that we found, as we were in consultation, because we worked very closely with the sector, that we do not really have a disability legislation that assists the department to have teeth, in other words, to enforce where there's non-compliance and so forth. And in line with the domestication of the UNCRPD, we therefore, which talks to which is the policy forerunner for our legislative audit and new laws, we then embarked on a process towards the development of the Disability Rights Bill. That process is underway, and we're working with the South African Law Reform Commission. I can report that at this stage, we are at the level of the publishing of the discussion paper. It has taken quite long with the South African Law Reform Commission from the process of the issue paper to the discussion paper, but we shall be proceeding with the consultations of the discussion paper once the South African Law Reform Commission publishes the discussion paper. Our intention, members and chairperson, is to ensure that we have a disability rights bill tabled before Parliament before the end of this sixth administration. Mindful of the fact that we didn't want the seventh administration to start the process of the development of the Disability Rights Bill afresh. Secondly, the embedding of disability mainstreaming in governance and administrative systems. DG has spoken already to the gender, disabuse, and disability responsive planning, monitoring, budgeting, evaluation process that we are involved in, which is driven at the departmental level, but we as the rights of persons with disabilities also participate in that particular process to ensure that disability indicators are built into that process. The strengthening with regard to strengthening accountability by duty bearers, I've already indicated that over and above the white paper, the UNCRPD, we also developed the frameworks and also ensuring that all persons with disabilities and their families benefit. We are looking at processes where we are working with the disability sector, and we have instituted some mechanisms in order for us to ensure that working with the sector, we respond to the plight of persons with all persons with disabilities, because persons with disabilities are not a homogeneous group, but there's a variety within that, as also the DBE presentation indicated that we have got persons with hearing impairments, persons with intellectual disabilities, persons with visual impairments, and so forth. And those are the different sectors that we work with. And also, amongst those groups, we also have the families, because also the families sometimes serve as caregivers for persons with disabilities. So there are organizations of parents of persons with disabilities that form part of our stakeholder engagement mechanism. I've spoken to the issue of the framework. I think we can continue to the next presentation. To the next slide, sorry. Now, our objective, Chairperson and members, is that we use the white paper because the distinct unique factor with our white paper is that it has an implementation matrix. And this white paper was approved by Cabinet in 2015. And this paper commits, amongst others, duty bearers to realize the rights of persons with disabilities by accelerating implementation of existing legislation that advocates equality for persons with disabilities. Now, our work is within our policy and legislative guiding environment is to look at the different legislations that exist in different departments and different policies that drive
service delivery in different departments and work with those departments to ensure that their policies are actually responsive to persons with disabilities. We are not really doing well in that area because most of our policies in various departments have not built in disability-specific indicators. As a result, it's impossible, for instance, to even deduce data that speaks to persons with disabilities in terms of how far and how are we doing. But with departments that we have managed to ensure that their policies begin to be responsive, we are beginning to receive that data, and it's work in progress that we are working on with specific departments. Also removing discriminatory barriers to access and participation, ensuring that universal design informs access and participation in the planning, budgeting, and service delivery value chain of all programs, and recognizing the right to self-representation and acknowledging that not all persons with disabilities are alike, and that personal circumstances, gender, age, sexuality, religious, cultural, geographic location requires different responses. And this is what is central to the mainstreaming of persons of programs for persons with disabilities in various departments. And that is the area that we are trying to work on and strengthen with the various departments whom we are in regular interactions with. Now, to institutionalize this mainstreaming, as I go into the next slide, for us to effectively institutionalize for mainstreaming, we have got what we call disability focal persons. But it's actually, we have women, youth, and disability focal persons. But there are disability focal persons that are supposed to be appointed and by a specific department in order for them to focus specifically on disability. There is lack of uniformity in that area, hence the DG spoke to the fact that we have established a GOD machinery where we are actually looking at the issue of focal persons broadly for women, for youth, and persons with disabilities, because we have realized that through the years and through the administration, somehow for some reason, the institutionalization of ensuring that we have disability focal persons has been inconsistent, and therefore that affected a lot of the work that we have to do with the departments. We have found that actually at a national, at a provincial, and at a local level, and I'm talking local municipalities, you either have disability focal persons that are appointed or deployed or nominated. So that proves that then brings a challenge, especially with the nominated and deployed ones, because then there is lack of continuity, because every 5 years you then have to redo the work and retrain, recapacitate the focal persons, and most of the work will be left behind. But it's an area we are looking into in order to ensure that we create uniformity in that area. So we have also ensured that various departments create what we call disability forums. When DBE was presenting, they spoke about the fact that their DG has also instituted the disability forum where they are able to have engagements with disability forums that are specifically working in the education field. So it's those kind of disability forums that I'm talking to that we are ensuring that various departments create as part of their stakeholder engagement strategies. But those forums are focused on internal and also external. Internal, looking at the department as a department, but externally looking at the transversal programs of the department. The terms of reference of those forums have been developed and are normally approved by accounting officers. And they have to be launched. And also, what we have indicated in order to ensure that these forums do work and they do operate was that the departments have to publish and sign charters for the forums, which are similar to what we call the 8-point plan of women or of gender that have since been adopted. Also, the coordination of internal and external forums by provincial departmental focal persons is critical, because the departments
therefore are able to then plan, also coordinate programs that are specific to persons with disabilities. It's still a challenge because we found that in various provinces, depending on where the provincial rights of persons with disability units are placed, because they are required to be placed in the offices of the premier, and in municipalities they are required to be placed in the mayor's offices and the municipal manager's offices for technical work. But we found that the lack of uniformity, but we are also realigning that, and there is quite significant work in progress in that line. The only challenge that we have discovered with the forums in the provinces is that now all transformation matters are then put in the one office which was meant for disability. You find that you have women, you have gender, you have HIV and AIDS, you have GBVF, you have veterans in some, and military veterans and so forth. And it's expected of that one office to be able to deal with that particular aspect. But we are working with the provincial departments to do that accordingly. We meet on a quarterly basis to assess and analyze progress on disability inclusion. For instance, with the different units in hospitals, districts, and provinces, in line with our MNC monitoring. I've cited units in hospitals and districts to show the magnitude of how wide our scope goes in terms of us having to build capacity and ensure that response in various institutions is adequate. We identified the need in the previous year to work on hospitals in the sense that most of our persons with disabilities could not access assistive devices that they are supposed to have to foster their independent living in society and so forth. And hence we had to work rigorously to ensure that hospitals and districts and provincial units respond adequately and report in line with our MNE reporting. One of the key areas in terms of institutionalizing mainstreaming, which we have found as a gap, is to dispel discrimination, is to ensure that we have a clear plan on awareness raising. Hence, we developed the awareness raising framework. But we went further to ensure that we instituted the 365 days on disabilities awareness program, such that every month, because already in terms of the health calendar, there is a 365 days calendar, that every month there is a focus that raises awareness on the different disabilities so that duty bearers are able to understand how they are supposed to interact with the different disabilities in response and as they develop programs. And the creation of a stakeholder database at the level of civil society organizations, both at national, provincial, local, district, and provincial level. This is critical for us because we then are able to know where are persons with disabilities, in what numbers, what disabilities are located where, and so forth. And therefore, those are the elements that we require as we institutionalize for mainstreaming. Next slide. Yes. The disaggregation of data. Members will be aware that different statistics and data is being provided by different departments and different platforms. So in order for us to ensure that we keep tab of where and how programs for persons with disabilities are benefiting from various programs, be it in the economic cluster, in the social cluster, and so forth, we have built into our different reporting mechanisms and also programs the disaggregation of data. It starts at a basic level where we require disaggregation of data, even for a meeting that is held, whether it's a community meeting or it's an internal departmental meeting, where we require that the disaggregation of data should be able to indicate the number of persons with disabilities in those particular forums. And this goes a long way in us assessing the level of participation and also inclusivity of persons with disabilities in our different programs. My counterpart will also talk to the issue of disaggregation of data in relation to how we work with STATSSA in terms of the collation of data at that level to ensure that data reflects persons with disabilities. The last one on the point of entry towards unlocking accessibility barriers, one of the key things that we identified, which forms the basis of mainstreaming of programs for persons with disabilities, is that we found that there are a lot of barriers that exist. And as a result, we're working with various departments to unlock those accessibility barriers. For instance, a requirement for employment, requirements for persons with disabilities to participate in business, but also requirements for learners with disabilities to access higher education and tertiary education. Next slide, please. In line with advocacy programs, the next slide. Yes. Like I said, we have institutionalized the 365 days on disabilities awareness campaign calendar. We have got the Disability Rights Awareness Month that was approved by Cabinet. We also ensure that departments prioritize and implement priorities as identified by the Presidential Working Group on Disability. The Presidential Working Group on Disability is a working group that has been set up by the President, which is made up of civil society organizations to guide and to advise the President on various areas that require attention. And to date, we were able with the Presidential Working Group on Disability, because we serve as a secretariat as the department, to host the Inclusive Education Summit as a priority. And number two, in the previous year, we hosted the Economic Summit of and for Persons with Disabilities, where we had persons with disabilities as participants in the mainstream economy coming to exhibit and display their different products, but also to have a conversation in terms of what are the barriers that are blocking persons with disabilities to participate in the mainstream economy. There are resolutions and recommendations that make that summit, and we are taking them forward with the economic cluster department. We have also embarked on a program for artists with disabilities to foster for social cohesion, and we have last year successfully launched a program in that regard, which we were working on with one of the embassies that partnered with us, the Korean embassy. And also there's a program on disability that is unfolding. We're at a level where we are now having a roundtable on transport matters that because it has become a critical barrier towards access for persons with disability on a number of things. And this is a multi-sectoral approach that we are doing, but we are working with the Department of Transport in that line. And also the access to justice and law. These were the key areas that were identified by the Presidential Working Group on Disability, and we are working with the Presidential Working Group on Civil Society Organizations on those particular programs to ensure that we implement them accordingly with the relevant departments. We have since signed an MOU, because one of the gaps that we identified was that there's lack of capacity amongst public servants in terms of understanding and knowing matters that are important around the disability agenda. So we have signed an MOU with the National School of Government, and this training has resumed already, where we are building capacity and training towards professionalization of the public service to respond effectively and on and for persons with disabilities. The first training took place now in February, where we targeted planners and those that are in finance positions at a senior level to actually receive this training so that they know how to then effectively respond when our disability focal persons and our monitoring and evaluation and planning people approach them with programs on disability. We are strengthening the national, provincial, local, and district machineries, including the departmental disability forums, as I indicated in the earlier slide. We are collaborating, partnering, and implementing programs with the sector of and for persons with disabilities. We are ensuring and integrating participation of persons with disabilities in programs, especially those towards their economic empowerment. I've indicated the training capacity on policy and legislative instruments that we are doing in all 9 provinces. We are concluding this training on the policy and legislative instruments that we have developed, because departments are then expected to develop implementation plans in line with the frameworks that we have developed, because that is what is lacking. And hence, we find gaps and challenges in terms of implementation, where some institutions implement depending on whether they have a budget this year, but they do not see the the importance of making sure that implementation plans respond to persons with disabilities. And we are maximizing consultations with sectors in all key instrument policies that are being developed. You have heard, and even departments and even policies, they are inviting us to actually input into those policies so that they begin to respond to persons with disabilities. The NSP on GBV is one of those which is driven by our department. We have built in a pillars with persons with disabilities there. Even the National Youth Policy and some of the NYDA programs that are there that are specific for youth with disabilities and so forth. So I'll pause. There's a lot that I indicate, but I thought in summary I should touch on the key matters that we do in the advocacy and mainstreaming. I'll hand over to Dr. Pravina Sukraj Eli to take us through the governance and compliance, which is a component also of the rights of persons with disabilities branch. Thank you, Chairperson and members and colleagues that have attended.
Good morning. As very indicated, Sukraj Eli, and I'm the Chief Director responsible for the governance and compliance section within the Rights of Persons with Disabilities branch at the department. I just want to say, you know, although we have the two sub-programs for the rights of persons with disabilities, we work very much hand-in-hand with each other in order to move the agenda forward for persons with disabilities in the country. And just to highlight and say that advocacy and mainstreaming focuses much on the policies, on the awareness raising, advocacy, etc. Governance and compliance, we focus on ensuring that we have disability rights inclusion and that there is disability responsive planning, budgeting, monitoring, evaluation, auditing, and also reporting and research across government on the areas of disabilities. We are the national disability rights coordinating mechanism in the country, and we set the agenda for disability rights. We are responsible to coordinate all reports across government departments to compile national, regional, and international reports relating to disability rights. We are responsible to also monitor and evaluate progressive realization and the impact of implementation of national and international laws and policies in the country. And as you know, research is critical in order to help us develop, so we very much involved in disability inclusive research.
Next slide, please.
So although we have various, we have all departments, institutions need to report against various instruments. So you're looking at the UNCRPD, you're looking at the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities.
Next slide, please.
Sorry colleagues, I'm blind, so I'm not able to see whether you've changed the slide. So I've just got someone assisting me. Okay, thank you. So reporting institutions need to report against various human rights instruments. And we have the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, the White Paper on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, Sustainable Development Goals, National Development Plans, and our MPSF. And then also we have very often questionnaires that come from the independent experts on the protection of persons with disabilities, protection of persons with albinism, that we need to respond to as a country, where we need to get government-wide responses and compliance. We also then need compliance with the frameworks that Mr. Vele was just talking about in terms of the universal access and design, awareness raising, reasonable accommodation, self-representation. So as much as we have these various instruments and we require this compliance, it's very difficult for us to actually obtain reports from the various government departments when we're trying to actually collate the responses to the UN country report, to the independent experts, etc. And that is very much due to the reason that we do not have a disability-specific legislation currently, as was mentioned by Ms. Mabella, that we're working on that to enable us to actually enforce enforce the legislation and to ensure that government departments and society as a whole is actually complying with implementation and then also in terms of reporting. And I just want to highlight some of the challenges that we experience is that very often when we request reports, we do not receive reports. Sometimes we get reports intermittently. It's very infrequent. There's poor quality reports given. Information is not substantiated in terms of portfolios of evidence that is provided, which does create a very, you know, very big problems and challenges for us in terms of our reporting. So we can move to the next slide. I want to highlight some of the priorities in terms of the work that we are doing as the sub-program governance and compliance within the department. And, you know, our key priority, monitoring, evaluation, reporting, and research. That you understand what the work is that we're doing in terms of the planning. So in order to help departments plan better, we as the department analyze the draft annual performance plans of government departments together with DPME. We look at a disability inclusive lens, and for this year we have analyzed 50 national government departments APPs. Now how do this analysis? I just want to highlight the high level questions that we asked, and I also indicate the findings to you. So how departments, do you have a political high-level statement on rights of persons with disabilities and equity commitments? Only 10% of government departments said yes. 85% did not have a high-level political statement and equity commitments, and 5% mentioned it in passing, so it's partial. The other question we said, are there procurement targets clearly outlined in departmental APPs, 10% said yes, 77% said no, and 13% was only partial. The next question we said is, do they actually have employment equity targets reflected in the APPs? And just to clarify, the white paper says 7% needs to be achieved by 2030. So for now, we actually were looking at 2.5% equity targets, or and even if there was an equity target set on the APP, we said yes, at least departments were setting the employment equity targets. And what we found was only 15% of government departments have clear employment equity targets outlined. 65% do not have equity targets outlined. And 20% in passing say they will be looking to employ persons with disabilities. The other question we said is there a disability mainstreaming strategy specifically outlined in APPs? Only 13% outlined that they have disability mainstreaming strategies. 65% did not outline mainstreaming strategies in the APP, and 22% did mention it in passing. And then we said the next question was, do the technical indicator descriptors in the APP disaggregate data according to sex, age, and disabilities for all indicators? 31% did disaggregate data according to sex, age, and disabilities. 46% of the government departments did not disaggregate data according to disability, and 23% were partially compliant. And then the last question that I will highlight was what we asked him was, do government departments provide budget for persons with disabilities in terms of services, programs, in terms of cost drivers for persons with disabilities? Only 4% of government departments provided budget for disability-related programs and policies. 83% did not provide budget estimates in the APPs, and 13% had partially provided for budgets in the APPs. So looking at this
bleak analysis, colleagues. And members and chair. We have resolved to have feedback sessions with the various government departments to summarize the analysis and to provide them with recommendations on how they can improve the targets to be more stability inclusive in line with the MTSF. We go to the next slide. So the other priority that we're focusing on is monitoring, as I indicated. Now, monitoring is critical for us to actually determine whether we have moved in terms of where we are, where we were, and where we are currently. Have we made any progress? In terms of all the disability rights instruments that currently exist, when we request reporting institution to give us reports, we find that government departments are finding it very burdensome to report on the various instruments. So what we have done is we have conducted an exercise this year where we have harmonized all disability rights instruments that exist, ranging from the UNCRB PD to the WPRB PD, SDGs, MTSF, etc. And we've pulled all of these instruments together and we've created a simplified reporting template. And what we have also done is we've developed a conceptual framework for automated reporting to occur. And during the next financial year, we will be developing the system and piloting it to see how the automated reporting system can work. We're hoping that this will assist with more effective reporting, better management of data, in order for us to monitor where we are in terms of implementing disability rights services, programs, policies across the government departments. We can move to the next slide. So the other priority is evaluation. And as you heard that we have the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities. This year, in conjunction with the DPME, is we are evaluating the implementation. So we're doing an implementation evaluation on how far we have come with implementing the objectives in the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities. We'll be highlighting the challenges and the achievements of how much we have developed a theory of change. And by the end of this financial year, we'll have a draft evaluation report. And by the end of September this year, we will have the theory of change, our log frame, our interventions in place, etc., to be able to guide us on how we must progress based on the results of the evaluation. We can move to the next slide. So the next priority for us is annually on the progress of the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities. We would collect this information from all national government departments on a quarterly basis. As I indicated to you, sometimes it's very difficult to actually get the government departments in the room for the quarterly meeting, so we have to start looking at annual reports and trying to find some information to actually put in these annual reports to show the progress. So we're still trying to institutionalize that, you know, this quarterly meetings, that focal points are actually identified and do attend and do report and adequately report. So we would put together the annual compliance report. This is our sixth report that we have done during the course of this year. And for next year, we will do our seventh report on the white paper. We process the report through the DG's clusters, through to Cabinet, and we gazette and we publish the report. We're also responsible to put together the UN country report and various other reports that arise from time to time, and questionnaires that come about from the independent experts. So that is, and so far as our reporting goes, that I will deal with in this presentation. We can move to the next slide, and as I indicated to you, it's research. So research is critical for us, and what we found is, you know, everyone needs to, across the departments, prioritize some sort of research that does include disability within the objectives and the methodology, et cetera, where you have persons with disabilities included in the research. And we as DWYPD have completed the research on the socioeconomic impact of COVID-19. We were also able to complete the research on the elements and economic costs of disabilities for children with disabilities and adults with physical disabilities, just to be able to show what the costs are for households with children with disabilities and adults with physical disabilities. It's actually a part two of the research. Part one was completed a few years ago. However, we didn't have enough finances, and it did not reach that duration point. We went ahead and we did part two of the study. We will be summarizing part one and part two to make it easily readable for everyone in the country, and we will then be publishing that to understand the cost drivers involved for. During this financial year, critical research on the evaluation of access to education support and children and young people with disabilities. We're working with CME and the Department of Basic Education. We want to just ascertain where we are in terms of providing support and services for our children and young people. And we're hoping the findings of the research is able to inform the review of Education White Paper 6. And that DDE would be able to use the findings. So the next slide, just to we aim to continuously report and coordinate reporting on all national, international, regional instruments. We will continue to monitor all our performance across government departments, as all of us as a whole. We will also focus on the evaluations in terms of our policies, our laws, etc. And we will continue with the various pieces of research that we are doing. Just to say for the last slide, we are aiming very much to try and institutionalize disability mainstreaming and embed it in all government departments. And we need government, we are trying to strengthen that by trying to ensure that government departments take ownership of the mainstreaming of disability within the departments. And what we're currently noticing is that, unfortunately, even within national government departments, disability is thrown, you know, like a hot potato from one unit to another. And unfortunately, even within social development, we don't have an identified focal point or coordinator. We can say, please, can you report on all the services in terms of what is being done for social development as a whole? So I think these are things that we want to make sure that we get done, and we are now in constant consultation with the department and other departments to make sure that we have this national coordination within each department to be able to monitor and report on what the department is doing, so we actually get that information. Thank you, Chair and colleagues, for giving me this opportunity. I will move on to my colleague, who will be now presenting on youth.
Okay, thank you very much, the youth.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee and all senior managers from different government departments. I'm presenting on services to the youth. My name is Benis Chahala. I'm responsible for youth development in the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. In the department, we have got the National Youth Development Program, which is responsible for providing technical support to political principals in overseeing youth development service provisions in the country. The unit is also delivering its mandate in line with the mandate of the Department of leading on socioeconomic transformation, empowerment, and participation of women, youth, and persons with disabilities through mainstreaming, advocacy, monitoring, and evaluation. There are two sub-programs in the National Youth Development Program: youth policy, legislation, monitoring and evaluation, as well as stakeholder engagement and support. Next slide. Thanks. Prior to me providing services that we have delivered in terms of policy and legislation, I just want to indicate that we are guided by international and national instruments in delivering youth development services. At international level, we've got the UN World Programme of Action for Youth. We also have got the SDGs. We have the Commonwealth Youth Charter. We also have the AU Agenda 2063, the African Youth Charter, as well as the African Youth Decade Plan of Action for Youth. And we also have the SADC Business Plan and Strategy. There are also instruments that are guiding us at national level. We are guided first by the Constitution of the Republic. We are also guided by the National Development Plan. We are guided by the National Youth Policy 2020-2030, which has been approved by Cabinet. We are also guided by national instruments such as the National Youth Development Agency Act, which provides for establishment of our national entity. We are guided by the Integrated Youth Development Strategy, Youth Employment Accord, White Paper for Social Welfare, as well as the Reconstruction and Development Program. And the services that we have rendered so far, or what we have achieved as the department. Go back to the previous slide, please. Back to the previous slide. As the department, we have reviewed the National Youth Policy 2009-2014, as well as the National Youth Policy 2015-2020. In this regard, we have developed the National Youth Policy 2020-2030, which is the current policy that is guiding us. We have also developed the National Youth Service Framework, a framework that guides implementation of the National Youth Services. You are aware that, for an example, different government departments are implementing the National Youth Service program, as well as the NYDA through the Presidential Stimulus Program. They are implementing this government-wide and sector-wide program. We have developed the MNE framework for the National Youth Policy, and it has already been approved by Cabinet. This framework checks implementation of youth development services across various policy domains. It provides for high-level outcome as well as output indicators. So we track and we obtain the reports from various government departments in terms of what they are doing on youth development. And the challenge in this regard is that we have not been getting good response in terms of reports on all the indicators. And as the department, we are busy with capacity building program for our youth focal points, but then.
Look at March 90.60 from 93.60. I lost 3 kgs on the dot.
Thank you, friend. It's home workouts, but and Kabiko consistent, yes, because I've been sick, I've been feeling even Londo's even in a fever the other week. Overhead flu for the gay one. Well and the lion then I say so the PMS well and the lion the and a fever food. So if I were kinda didn't share that so it's the fasting, even with the fasting government weekends. I want the day. I'm doing intermittent fasting. I'm going to eat twice a day, according to the one that I chose, that I could say that it could work for me. It was 12 hours, right? Yeah. So I changed it to eating once a day. So some days I could feel when I understand the eating with me. Some days, some weekends, just like a bit of passion, I'm tired. Every time I go, I have like my wisdom teeth. So like they are normal. Who are you talking to? Because I haven't been like very strict about it. But yeah, I know that. But I'm losing it at the same time. Because of the heat without president and manifesting. So I'm happy actually. I want to get 285. So I'm going to try and get that 5 pounds this month. Then we can go for the exercise. And it's not even like exercises, yeah? And so woman wants to meet you now, come back now. Just exercises, remember, and then blood. So when I quite manage anything, I actually need a color filter, so for time, you know, one person, because I got a match. I come my little team, I'm going to my next month. If not today, yeah, well, it depends, because it's good for if it's done as a school, but it's the same, but post, but it's the same, but we will change the school. So we didn't want to take a lot of money for post, so we can get a full post. So, Another thing I do is, when I'm ill, and even if you're not a good, and if you're not ill, only, I'm going to pay a little bit. Then the running I can do that one to go with and even if actually I don't like it. To see a boy but I so can I can't tell you more
what I did because in some of which are presented.
Yeah, it's not my thing.
Oversight through to the NYDA and its branches. Next slide. We are also involved in stakeholder engagements at national as well as the provincial level. I think as already alluded by the DG that there is geodimensionary. We are also responsible for convening the National Youth Missionary at national level. We also support the various provinces when they convene the province-specific missionary. But let me say that we are having challenges in ensuring that all the stakeholders report regularly as expected. And then again, we also have got a challenge that some of the provinces still do not have the provincial youth missionaries. We have facilitated the signing of the MOUs on the Youth Skills and Employment Initiative. And the MOU has been signed with the Department of Cooperative Governance as well as Cisco. However, we are currently facilitating signature of this MOU with NEMISA as well as DigiConnect. And once the MOU has been signed, we will facilitate that it is actually presented to Cabinet via the clusters. We are conducting the evaluation of Youth Employment Initiative, which is driven by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. This study will look at youth employment initiatives across government as well as NGO sector, and then also assess the impact thereof. The aim is to try to obtain the best practices in order to ensure that we scale up interventions that can reach out to many young people, but then also those that can improve their quality of life. We collaborate on national engagement with the National Youth Development Agency. For an example, the National Youth Month commemoration, as well as the National Youth Day. So in this regard, the department provides support, such as ensuring that such initiatives are presented to Cabinet for approval. And then we also support the principals in order to ensure that they attend to these events. We coordinate international engagements as well, such for an example, in our president and the president of Nigeria launched the SA Nigeria Youth Dialogue. So the MOU has been signed, and the expectation then is that as the department, we need to ensure that these dialogues are convened on an annual basis. We have the signing of the MOUs, for an example, with Namibia, and this MOU is due for review. The NYDA also signed the MOU with Mexico. We also signed with Cote d'Ivoire and also with Nigeria. We coordinate participation by the minister and young people in multilateral fora, such as the UN, ECOSOC, AU, SADC, Commonwealth, and the BRICS, as well as Y20. Members are aware that we will this year be hosting the BRICS Youth Summit and Ministers meeting, which is going to be preceding the Heads of Government meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Shoki Shabalala. I am going to present the last few slides. I'm not sure whether my video is showing because I'm on my cell phone, and if it doesn't, I do apologize. My laptop just crashed and it is with IT for assessment. This presentation talks to persons with disabilities within the context of gender-based violence and femicide response. And it is premised from the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide Strategic Posture. Now, in terms of the overview of the NSP as abbreviated, this is now the role of the department as articulated. The coordination of the implementation of the NSP on gender-based violence and femicide is the responsibility of the department. The Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities is also responsible for compiling monthly reports based on progress from the various departments, which have specific implementation responsibilities that are based on outputs from other sectors, which is mainly through the multisectoral NGBZ collective. And these reports are submitted to the president on a monthly basis. We have now defined the purpose of the NSP, which aims to provide a multisectoral and a coherent strategic policy and programmatic framework to strengthen a coordinated national response to gender-based violence and femicide pandemic. The vision is clearly articulated as a South Africa free from GBV directed at women, youth and children, as well as LGBTQIA plus persons, assuming that we all understand that women are not a homogeneous group. The scope is that the NFP on GBV on comprehensively and strategically responding to GBVF with a specific focus on violence against all women, hence my previous statement that they are not a homogeneous group, and this is across age, physical location, disabilities highlighted in this instance, sexual orientation and gender identity, nationality and other diversities, and violence against children. For us, disability is an integral part of the NSP on GBVF. The NSP on GBVF vision of eradicating GBVF cannot be realized without ending violence against persons with disabilities in all their diversity and without comprehensive and inclusive approaches to policy and programming. A key recognition is that marginalization and exploitation of persons with disabilities intensifies vulnerability to gender-based violence and femicide and other forms of discrimination, such as socioeconomic exclusion. This slide is a summary of, at a very high level, of some of our strategic interventions, strengthening accountability across the government system for implementation through institutionalization of the NSP on GBVF and National Comprehensive GBVF Prevention Strategy, as well as enforcement of compliance with progress reporting. We are now localizing the National Strategic Plan, working with different municipalities, COCTA and SALGA, in ensuring that we take the NSP, we localize it, but also it is responsive to persons with disabilities. Establishment of disability-inclusive rapid response teams across all district municipalities. Rapid response teams are structures that are meant to be agile in their responses, multi-sectoral in nature. We've just trained in Maludia Pofun. We had representation of persons with disabilities, so that whatever that gets drafted and crafted as a program of action is disability responsive. And the training that will follow suit as well accommodates and is responsive to the needs of persons with disabilities. Advocate for tackling in terms of communication, universal design and access to victim-friendly survivor-focused services for persons with disabilities. And I do know that the Department of Justice has responded to this advocacy from our part, and they are now beginning to look at to what extent are their services disability responsive at courts level, beyond just physical access, but to making sure that the courts are somehow accessible and training of interpreters and all of that. So this is a program that is still unfolding on their part. Monitor and evaluate progress in implementation. An implementation evaluation is scheduled for the 23-24 financial year, and we will work on ensuring disability-specific targets are mainstream across all the NSP, GBV, six pillars of the NSP, and each pillar, there's no way we will mainstream the issues of persons with disability. From an accountability point to prevention, as well pillar three and four, which is access to justice, and responsive to issues of access to services speedily. Sectoral and GBV collective that was established in June 2020 sectoral efforts. This is a big volunteer network, but it's aimed to focus on what we normally call upscaling 100-day challenges, which are uniquely structured interventions, and they will have a disability lens as well, as we started already in the Maluti area. Ensure the availability of data in terms of disability is persisting. And we are giving you an example here. We just chose the Department of Small Business that they have earmarked an allocation of 9.3 million, which is aimed at being dispersed enterprises that are owned by persons with disabilities. To date, they have zero disbursement on their part. We have raised, the only way we could find a way of matter was to raise it at the cluster of the Director Generals, because the strategic plan is a standing agenda item at the clusters of all the DGs, the cabinet clusters, those clusters. But what we did, we had to reach out to the Department of Small Business and engage their focal point. In engaging that focal point, we actually came to a point where we agreed with them that they need to build capacity in their department. As a result, they have appointed a director who will now focus on ensuring that there is a targeted focus specifically to deal with capabilities and outreach programs and building capacity, looking for train them issues and how to trade this government as well. We've already begun and own businesses in the Maluku region, and amongst them comprises persons with disabilities, because when we were setting up a rapid response team, we couldn't secure a service provider to provide catering, something that we regard as very simple, but none of the women complied with procurement requirements. We will be going back first quarter of this financial year. We pulled all stops and relevant departments that we go and build capacity in that area so that women in that area, including women with disabilities, are well poised, competent, and ready to work with government in this area as well. I think the last part on this slide is the issue that relates to the fact that we do have a bill that is now in Parliament on the setting up or establishment of the Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. Work is already underway, and the Portfolio Committee on Women and Persons with Disabilities have started to deal with the bill itself in an effort to ensure that at the point when consultations are unfolding, they too are on board and they too know exactly what are the issues that ought to be addressed in dealing with that matter. We've had a presidential summit. There are issues that were raised at the presidential summit recently that relate to persons with disabilities, and those have been captured in the resolution, and a plan of action has been developed to ensure the implementation and fast-tracking of the resolution. And we will be popularizing the national strategic plan on gender-based violence and femicide, in particular the summary version of it. And that summary version will also be interpreted, be translated into Braille, so that it accommodates persons that need to use Braille and have an understanding of what is it that the NFP supports for, how to report what to expect from each of the government departments. I'd like to pause there, Chairperson, and say that's where my presentation ends. Thank you.
Thank you. We never expected that it will be a long, long presentation, to such an extent that I'm not sure to members whether should we allow the department also to present, but it's agreed, let's allow them and maybe give ourselves time for questioning, okay, for questions. Hello?
When we give them chance, I think we won't have time to ask questions. We have underestimated that all these departments that are presenting, they will come with this huge information that we needed so much. I don't think even we are going to do justice for asking, because we've got many questions to ask. Thank you. You may give them, I don't know if how are we going to get the response and where are we going to send our questions. Because normally you know, two people only ask, and then that is the time of the bus. It's 12 o'clock now. What about 12? My bus is leaving.
Yes, Honorable Jim, that's what I'm thinking also, that maybe we have to arrange another meeting for questions. Then let's allow the department to continue. Otherwise, really, we never expected that it will take such a long time, and we won't be doing justice, really, in terms of asking questions, because we have lots and lots of questions as important information that we are being given today. Is there any other presentation from women?
Okay, slide. I will be taking them. My name is Dinawo. I'm responding.
Dinawo, excuse me, there is an echo at your background. Can you correct that and continue?
Okay, I'm not sure if there's still an echo.
It's better now.
Okay, thank you so much. And good afternoon, Chair, and all members and protocol observers. I will just try to quickly summarize the next few slides.
I'm Janelle Mago, responsible for monitoring, evaluation, research and coordination for women, youth and persons with disabilities in the department. And with the slides that I've been taking, actually our work is focusing on the benefits of women, youth and persons with disabilities. What is one of the key responsibilities we have is the coordination of gender responsibility and diversity monitoring, evaluation and audit framework. And one of my colleagues has already spoken to that again, and that's going to be the end of that might have been related to that. In our coordination of framework itself, we hold meetings with national departments and provincial departments, annual statements from the framework. We just had our largest physical engagement in federal of with all with the focal point for women and disabilities. MNG officials, finance officials, and all team officials, because that's where the framework is actually located and trying to facilitate all the mainstreaming of women's youth and disability at the level of life they are actually. So the framework where it was actually on gender, but because the department has managed to be responsible for the center of disability, by extension, we have then started to request to implement. On an annual basis, submit self-assessment monitoring report annually. And in this current financial year, it will be our fourth report of basic information from the department on self-assessment monitoring report and how the department activities was based on gender responsibility. So continuing on the coordination is that they have a training course that is offered by the Ministry of Health on the gender responsibility. Framework over and above that is something that we need to touch earlier on is that working together with the Central Treasury and IMF, we have developed the gender budgeting guidelines that we roll out to the financial pilot in 2023-2024 to the department and the people that came home for the gender budgeting. And we also have worked for the council gender unit. Framework holds a framework from various instruments of practices of gender and investment that is being used for women and disabilities. And as you mentioned, the number of data cases monitored on an annual basis and are also reported to the so we have reported to cabinet last year on gender implementation, gender responsive framework as well as monitoring reports. Just generally in terms of providing gradual improvement in the department in mainstreaming the finances of women and persons with disabilities across board. And also there has evaluation our own evaluation. So you can go back and ask one slide. So on the evaluation on implementation of government at work. Preferential procurement, looking at women and persons with disabilities on the first of this was concluded last year and was presented to candidates in November. And some of the findings, especially as we age because of disabilities, we still have serious challenges in that data, overall data for the country is still sitting at 0.9 in terms of overall preferential procurement for persons with disabilities on the census. In terms of the department that has been well in that study was the Department of Employment and Labor, sitting at 3.75 in 2019-2020, as well as in 2021 by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, sitting at 3%. So one of the challenges is access to actual data, aggregated data for women, youth, and persons with disabilities, but this is the data that we can then talk to in terms of the study that we conducted last year on the implementation of the federalized culture. You can move to the next slide. So the last slide talks to the many of the things that around stakeholder engagement in the past. And we have conducted two sessions on child listening where people were held and how they environment. In 2022, we currently are considering for sessions but otherwise in the next on the 3rd of March as well as in Mpumalanga on the 20th of March. So this session has a focus on child health. And so the focus that is related to the community today in terms of areas of expertise around child health and challenges and experience and look at how to unblock some of the challenges that experience, whatever challenges that I experienced in the course and in education. Issues that are taking, you know, women and children in terms of men, important. And in the current, another session in Northwest on the 8th of September, this is the second annual Sunday Disability Support Roundtable with more insights for people that can help better life. So this event will then happen on the 8th of March. We are anticipating we'll have about 250 participants. Just to add on some of it, in this particular branch, also includes responsibility around the 15 days of activism and violence department. So in the company, we are also responsible for ensuring that that was there to be taken through on an annual basis, looking at various issues that affect women in their diversity that would also implement this disability. And we also talk race management and heritage and other number of sessions that I can take in Cape Town as well as in Northwest, and we will be continuing with those sessions. So it's not just a piece because we're running through the presentation, but there's a number of engagements that we do that affect women with disability, but it's parents management that we can also cover because we do have that is done within this platform. So I think in terms of presentation that I wanted to share, I would just very conclude by saying that the implementation of the gender responsive framework is also aligned with the gender strategic framework, where as a department we expected to report on the responsiveness of one plan of this, but also expected to report on the responsiveness of the executive plan, as well as the position and other developments. As a department has conducted analysis of specific plans for all national and provincial departments, those reports are available, and we are going to put out and source support to also analyze the IT as well as the one plan for the next quarter of the year. So, Chair, I will take it at that in terms of this.
Thank you very much. Seemingly it was the last slide, or it was the last presentation from the Department of Women and Youth. Can we then, DG, from Department of Youth?
Chair?
Is there anything, I'm asking from the DG of the Department of Women and Youth, is there anything that you think is left out for now before we give over to Department of Social Development?
Amen. No, Chair. Thank you very much for giving us an opportunity. I think we have presented everything. You can hand over to Social Development. Thank you once again.
Okay, thank you. Acting DG LinkedIn. Over to you.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think I won't waste a lot of time. In fact, I'll ask my team to just go into the specific sort of services and programs that we have. So I know we have some time. So we'll come in a little later, but I'll ask my team to come in and really to talk to the services. I think the two presentations from both the basic education and women are really laid the platform, you know, and we will just speak specifically to the services and not go into the details that cut across all three of us. So I'll ask my speaker now if she can come in. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Bingy. Thanks, Chair. Allow anyone to
slide the presentation.
All right.
Apologies, can you give me your name again?
Can you? Malule, yes.
All right. All right. He's a co-host now. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Looking at the time, we failed exercise where we're just zoom in directly to the intervention. And the programs and services that we provide as a director service to persons with disability. And I'm just gonna touch on a number of those interventions directly.
Come closer to the mic. Excuse me. Come closer to the mic. You seem not to be clear. It's cutting.
Okay. Chairperson and esteemed members, my name is Mantiki Mulamu. I'm presenting for social development on the program services for persons with disabilities. And we, as I said, we're going to just zoom directly into the program covered in the interventions that we provide as a directory. But firstly, let me give the contextual analysis of the program. As a department, our mandate is derived from the broader social protection expressed in Section 9, 10, and 27 of the Constitution, the DSD-specific legislation, and Chapter 11 of the National Development Plan. This is based on the principles and values of democracy, social justice, human dignity and equality. Chairperson, South Africa ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, as it was actually explained thoroughly by the Department of Women in their presentation. DSD and other departments, for example, the Department of Health, the Department of Basic Education, on the other hand, has a direct mandate of service provision. And for DSD, it includes as one of the services the development of blueprints to guide and monitor the funding of NGOs and disabled persons organizations at both national and provincial level. In the absence of legislation governing services to persons with disabilities, Chairperson, the draft policy on social development services to persons with disabilities has been developed by the department, which is currently being prepared to be gazetted for public comment. That has been developed, and this policy has been developed to ensure the improvement of the overall quality of lives of persons with disabilities and their families. It is important to note that as a department, we depend on a positive collaborative relationship with our sector departments to implement our proposed policy and strategies comprehensively. The Department of Health, Basic Education, Cooperative Governance, and Traditional Affairs are particularly critical in the mainstreaming of disability considerations and the provision of comprehensive social development services to persons with disabilities, especially at local, district, and district level. And just to give an example, we depend on, especially, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Department. Further on, Chairperson, the purpose of the program is geared towards facilitation of the use of the policy, which then overall looks at accelerating access to a comprehensive and responsive social protection system as outlined in the National Development Plan, Vision 26. Just to zoom in terms of the what we did as the department on COVID-19, many public services were highly limited, if not completely halted, leaving persons with disabilities abandoned in terms of getting access to essential health care and social services. As the department, we developed standard operating procedures for protective workshops, day and daycare centers for children with disabilities, which provided information and guidelines on the approved steps that must be taken to prevent and contain the spread of COVID-19. And there was also issuing of regulations for our protective workshops and also our residential facilities to support the services that DSD was actually actually implementing in those facilities. You mentioned chairperson in terms of our departmental mandate. As a department, we look at policy development. Because as a department, we have policy development. Our main issue is the development of policy. And we have then developed the policy on social development services to persons with disabilities. This policy is aligned to the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities. The policy is the embodiment of the continued commitment by the department to realize the dignity of persons with disabilities. It has been developed for implementation, monitoring, evaluation, and reporting on the following two strategic objectives, namely, persons with disabilities continually receiving disability-specific social development services, as well as disability in all departmental interventions. As I said, the purpose of this program is to actually facilitate the acceleration of a comprehensive and responsive social protection system that is outlined in the National Development Plan. It is a policy advocate for mainstreaming and inclusion of disability considerations in all the department's program, which remains essential in expounding the department's role of implementing social development policies, strategies, programs, and projects that address systemic poverty and inequality among the poor, marginalized, and vulnerable groups in society, including persons with disabilities. Further on, our policy emphasizes the mandate of the department, which is providing services to persons with disabilities and the mainstreaming of disability within and across land functions. The policy and its implementation strategies have been developed to enable the DSD portfolios, which consists of the department itself, the South African Social Security Agency, SASA, the National Development Agency, NDA, and the provincial departments of social development, to qualitatively improve the services that these portfolios implement together with and for persons with disability. As a department guided by the cabinet adopted district development model, the department works in an integrated manner to support government's integrated and holistic provision of social development services to persons with disabilities. Zooming into the Provincial Disability Forum, which is a structure that has been developed by the department, and this has been developed as a forum or as a platform to coordinate the implementation and monitoring of the departmental disability rights agenda. The forum itself provides an oversight over the provincial departments and creates an interface between the and provinces to share information, ideas, and experiences among national and provincial officials in the disability program with a view of improving on the level of services and accountability towards persons with disabilities. Chairperson, the forum is made up of representatives from the nine provinces that are working within the disability program as their respective provinces. The services provided to the forum by the national department include capacity building initiatives on matters impacting on the disability program, hosting of key departments, national and provincial departments, that needs to actually share in terms of collaborative issues that need actually to be elevated, disability service organizations and disabled persons organizations hosted to enhance the collaboration and mainstreaming registry, and sharing of the DSD policy impacting on the departmental disability agenda, including monitoring and evaluation. This forum, Chairperson, meets on quarterly basis. And at the national level, we receive provincial quarterly reports and annual reports. And these reports, they cover the progress towards the implementation of the program. They provide challenges encountered by the provinces in the implementation of the program, but also it looks at the impact that is actually being recorded by the province in terms of the delivery of services to persons with disabilities. Looking at direct services that we provide to persons with disabilities. As a department, we provide the following services to persons with disabilities and their families at an individual level, institutional level, center level, and community-based level. Firstly, is a psychosocial support service. This chairperson and esteemed members is a cross-cutting services, as this cuts across all the interventions that we present. This is the cornerstone of services that is being provided by social services. These are care path interventions aimed at progressively and incrementally improving the beneficiary's independent functioning ability. These services cut across a number of programs for persons with disabilities, as I mentioned. And just to give an example, protective workshops, residential facilities, and some of the children's services and disability mainstreaming approaches utilize psychosocial support services developed by the department, and also those that we've zoomed in terms of persons with disabilities. They result in enhanced independence, socioeconomic inclusion, of persons with disabilities and their families. The service itself supports persons with disabilities to understand their abilities, limitations, and internal processes so that they can control their responses and make their own decisions where possible, live independently as possible, and participate in social life with little or no assistance. This is where it is actually possible for persons with disabilities. The services must be integrated. They are supposed to be holistic, and they are supposed to actually then benefit the beneficiaries, and they should strive to function independently and participate in socioeconomic life at MDC. The provision of these services calls for a collaborated effort amongst departments towards a delivery of comprehensive services, especially that these services are comprehensive in nature and they don't only cut across social development services, but also cut across health and Department of Basic Education services. This is but an example of the spread of protective workshops that are accepted by the department as they've been spread in the nine provinces. Moving on in terms of our intervention. The second intervention that I want to speak to is family and parental support programs. These are services that are geared for parents, primary caregivers, and children with disabilities. The services provide support to parents and families and develop their skills, especially on problem-solving approaches and access to services to address the parenting challenges in accessing services and in caring for children with disabilities. Parents and primary caregivers are empowered and linked with available resources within their areas, especially in rural areas. The capacity of the department is also developed and enhanced to enable them to provide the necessary support and assistance that is required, mainly by the parents and families. The other intervention that we provide is independent living programs. And these are services needed when persons with disabilities exercise their choice to live independently in their homes or centers in close proximity to amenities and services needed by the individual. This broadly refers to the ability of a person with any disability to live just like any person, to have opportunities to make decisions that affect their lives and to be able to pursue activities of their own choice with the necessary support to enable them to live independently. And chairperson, this actually where persons with disabilities require support. Our provincial counterparts and the district officials provide the necessary support through capacitated NGOs and those that are actually subsidized. Moving forward, we've got respite care services for families and children, including adults for persons with disabilities. As a department, we're focusing currently on rendering respite care services to families and family disability. But we are mindful of the fact that respite care services cut across all age cohorts within the disability. This is a family-centered temporary relief and a special care service for parents and primary caregivers to take a much-needed short break and time-limited break from the demands of caring for a child or an adult with disabilities or chronic illness. As I said, the current focus is on children with disabilities. Over and above the support to the family, the service is aimed at optimizing developmental outcomes for the child or a person with a disability that requires the service. The service seeks to develop a sustainable community-based service delivery model to address the marginalization of children or persons with disabilities and their families. This service is implemented in partnership with the Japan International Cooperative Agency to guide the provision of support services to families and or primary caregivers of children with disabilities. In terms of the services that we actually currently provide, we're looking at ensuring that the children's rights are actually known and implemented right through by the 9 provinces, 10 provide counseling services. We collaborate with key stakeholders in the provision of in providers and participation of parents and children with disabilities. We also offer parental support, as I actually alluded to earlier on. We look at the registration and funding of the service at district level and provincial level. We also then embark rigorously on capacity building, both of the NGO sector and the departmental officials. We also look at relevant stimulation activities that are required for the service. And lastly, we look at community-based rehabilitation that is required by our children at the community-based level. And this is provided jointly by the key departments, including the Department of Health. And also, in terms of the interventions, we look at the services that we provide in residential care facilities. These are services designed to provide support to persons with disabilities who are unable to live independently at their own home or in their own setting due to the limited functioning and or inadequacy of support, making provision for the ultimate reintegration back to the community where possible. In essence, what we say in Chairperson is that residential facilities are not looked at as a home, permanent home, where possible, and where persons with disabilities can then be reintegrated back into communities. That is facilitated through the programs that we develop. The service also provides support in the form of subsidies, capacity building, 239 facilities and 9 independent living centers that are spread across the 9 provinces. Some of the services that we provide within this residential facilities include psychosocial support services, as I alluded to initially, the rehabilitation services, activities of daily living, especially where we've got persons with intellectual disabilities that are within those facilities. We also do stimulation and social skills, capacity building and empowerment, and vocational programs in those facilities. We also look at care and support services, including personal assistance services or one-on-one caregiver services where needed, and the provision of assistive devices, which is done in conjunction with the Department of Health. In a nutshell, Chairperson, again, this actually indicates the spread of our residential facilities that is currently being subsidized by the Department of Social Development. Additionally to the programs and services and interventions that I just alluded to, we also have got campaigns and awareness raising programs that include the following. And we actually then implement this campaigns and awareness utilizing the guidelines that we've developed as a department on the empowerment of persons with disabilities and disability mainstreaming. summary? Can I continue? In summary, Chairperson, we ensured that the policy is aligned to the policy on social, on the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities, utilizing the disability management guidelines that we have. But secondly, we facilitate dialogues with parents of disabilities, mostly in rural areas, and informal settlements of the provinces. And this is aimed at raising the voices of parents, guiding them in matters impacting directly on the day-to-day lives while ensuring their inclusion in the departmental program. And also, we influence the inclusion of youth in the departmental program, youth program, and one of those being the YOLO HIV and AIDS youth program, ensuring that the program integrates and gives disability a focus within those programs. Further on, elevating and giving the minority, we elevate and give the minority disabilities a voice. An example of the campaign and the disability awareness programs of your brand, we've given a voice to persons with albinism, deaf, blind, persons of short stature, and persons with dyslexia. Further on, Chairperson, we also run awareness raising and educational campaigns targeting mothers, families, and the nation at large on the effects of alcohol on pregnant mothers. That is the elevated education on the fast fetal alcohol syndrome and the impact it has on children. We also further popularize the development, recognition, and integration of the guidelines on the empowerment of persons with disabilities and disability mainstreaming at the district level. With COPTA, there was a capacity building session that was made with COPTA to make them aware of the existence of the guidelines and capacitating them on the inclusion of disability mainstreaming and social development services that COPTA actually works around and needs to implement in their respective municipalities. Jointly, we designed and donated accessible media centers catering for the development of youth with disabilities in special schools, communities, and TV centers. And secondly, this has been done in all 9 provinces, ensuring that youth with disabilities are given an opportunity to be able to develop their CV, to be able to develop their skills in terms of computer programming, and they can also access opportunities on available jobs. Coming to leveraging on partnerships. As a department, we also get partnerships with our organizations. And as a department, we manage partnerships through our developed policy on funding of organizations and partnerships. And how we do it is that we provide funding to the NGOs that render services to persons with disabilities and disabled persons organizations at national, provincial, and district level for the for provision of the services directly to persons with disabilities at provincial and district level. The established partnership is aimed at facilitating the achievement of priorities of the department that is done through the implementation done by our wings and our partners, NGOs and DPOs, as I mentioned. We also establish relationship with the organizations through institution building and the support that we provide to them. And one of the support is capacity building on our program so that they get an understanding and know what our policies, strategies, and guidelines entail. And so the services do reach persons with different disabilities and are provided in an effective and efficient manner to the benefit of persons with disabilities. And we do this through conducting an impact analysis, but also through quarterly reports that we receive through our province. And we're also utilizing the funding as a tool to facilitate the transformation of social development service delivery to persons with disabilities and their families. You would understand, Chairperson and esteemed members, that in terms of funding and NGOs, those actually focused on disability were actually excluded for some time, and we use them, this tool, this policy development, this policy document, to ensure that organizations or persons with disabilities are actually then included. In terms of the social security services, looking at the grants that have been provided by our SASA agency, the picture for us reflects the number of persons with disabilities that are in recipient of the social grant, but also it actually reflects on those persons with disabilities, including children, that are in receipt of total temporary disability grants. And we projected this chairperson, and we are also mindful of the fact that the very temporary grants have to be then placed into the permanent disability grants, which the department is actually on progress looking at that. And this chairperson also gives the numbers in terms of the number of children with disabilities that are receiving grants provided for through the SASA. In terms of, again, social assistance, SASA pays disability grants and disability granting aid and care dependency grants to persons and children with disabilities on a monthly basis. At the end of January 2023, the number of other 1,042,224 as granting aid was 320,740. Children receiving the care dependency grant in 2023 stands at 153,247. The value of the care dependency grant is 1,190, and care dependency grant is also 190 on monthly basis, and the GIA is 480 per month. The Minister of Finance, in his recent budget speech, has announced that both the DG and the CDG will increase by 90% in April 2023 and 10% in October 2023, while GIA will increase by 20% in April 2023 and 10 rand in October 2023. My apologies, that I didn't actually touch in terms of my presentation. Thank you. In conclusion, Chairperson, we and the portfolio committee actually consider what is done at the department, and we will await questions from the portfolio of the acting members. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. That's the end of the presentation. Maybe just two things, and then I'll ask the money if he has anything to add. The first is to say that the two other important departments will also play a very crucial role on the subject matter. One is the Department of Health, particularly when it comes to issues of assessment, as well as issues of mental health. And the second one, the Department of Property Governance, as it relates to services or access to service centers. So the committee may want to also touch base with those departments so that you have a holistic approach or I suppose view of the services as persons with disabilities as well as children. But let me thank you very much, Mansuka. Let me ask Sabani if there's anything else to add, and then we will hand it over back to you on the chair. Thank you. Sabani?
No, just nothing to add.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair.
Members, I just noticed that the system has probably kicked the chairperson out. She had connected via her cell phone. So or maybe in the interim, someone can assist. Yes.
There. I see she is online.
You know, I'm done. Okay. Oh, good. There she is now. Yes. Okay. So now you're in. Okay. Sorry, my
sister. Yes, system. I am in. I've been in throughout. I've listened to the
Okay.
But I don't know. I hear that it's quiet now. What has happened?
The DSD just finished presenting, Chair.
Okay.
Yes.
So, what time is it?
That we don't get the time.
Whether can't we rather say, let's note the question. Is the acting DG still in? Is the acting DG still in? Yoli?
I'm looking, Chair.
Okay. Acting DG, are you done with your presentation? Because I'm looking at the time. Hmm?
Yes, yes, ma'am, we are done.
Okay. What we need to do, honorable members, I'm suggesting that we set up another time for questions. Because by the looks of things, we can't be making justice to these questions. If the Department of Social Development is done with the with the presentation, what was the next item when I would accept
it? No,
let's defer the and look for ourselves for a day where we're going to start with the questions and then we move on. Can we defer? Do we agree, honorable members?
Chairperson, I had my hand up. It's Minister Zulu.
Okay, Minister, let me give you, but we are deferring the questions.
Yes, Chairperson, that's why. Yes, Chairperson, I just wanted to make a proposal for us in the Department of Social Development. If we can get some of the questions earlier in writing, it will save the time. We can try and be ready so that we don't take long in responding, if that's acceptable, Chair.
Okay, let's rather go all of us to all departments and forward the questions, right? But it doesn't mean that we will close for other people that haven't managed to send all the questions. We'll have the time to open up. Can I request the honorable members to accept?
Chairperson, I have my hand up.
Okay.
Chairperson, if I may, I just want to speak to, you know, the whole, what has been happening in our committee is over Zoom. We don't get to properly engage with presentations and to interrogate presentations like we should be doing. I mean, the first presenter started their presentation at 9:45 when they were meant to start at 9:20. They are meant to start. So on the platform of Zoom, we are constantly always delayed. And that is why I've previously made a request that we maybe need to try coming to meet in person to see how that progresses. Our committee meetings, and then if in person we are able to better interrogate these presentations, because we aren't doing justice to the time that we are spending on these presentations, Chairperson, and at some point maybe we even need to consider starting our meetings with presentations having to be read, go straight into questions, then into replies, and then that will give members a second opportunity to actually engage the various departments on the presentation. And while we note that we send questions in writing and departments have to come back,
Mamela, I am in it.
Yeah,
I'm in it.
And then there's also the issue of the bus. So if we are at the venue in Parliament, we wouldn't be rushing for buses. And lastly, Chairperson, 2 weeks ago, we had our meeting with the Post Bank and SASSA. And in that meeting, there were commitments made that they will send the committee members the SLA. So we are still waiting for those SLA agreements and those commitments. So it doesn't give me a lot of confidence that when we do things in writing and when we do ask for commitments from the departments and the entities and so forth, that we actually get those that information back timelessly, because we're still waiting for things that were committed to 2 weeks ago. So I really do think, Chairperson, we need to relook how we are running our committees and interrogating our committees going forward now in 2023. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, thank you very much. Your presentation, hello, your presentation when Alex Abrams was taken into consideration. But looking at ours, we are not staying in Cape Town. We have to travel to come. And it's towards the end of financial year. So we don't have tickets now. And we have to look at that maybe in the next financial year. That is after April. I'm suggesting that let's not debate and discuss that. If there is a possibility of the committee rooms and also people do have tickets, because now we finished our tickets. So, and we are going to get the tickets in April. So even myself, I'm thinking about myself, but I know for a fact that it was advantageous of this, but maybe we also have to shift the times now whilst we are still talking about this room of virtual. Let's start earlier, so as to make the 12 o'clock, because immediately after 12:30 when the bus arrives, no one is concentrating because everyone, most of us that are not driving, that are not having cars, have to rush. So we have taken note of what you are saying, but we have to be realistic in terms of thinking for those that are not staying around. But I have taken note, it's really a disturbing this thing of rushing for the bus and then you are unable to concentrate, and we never knew that this presentation would take us so long. Otherwise, the reality of the matter, we have to think on our own. Thanks, Alex, about that.
There are two more
honorable
hands, too. Honorable Ankulu, no, Honorable Fanamerve.
Okay. Let's first give Fandamere, Honorable Fandamere, and then followed by Honorable Kate Bulangulu.
Very much. I wonder if I can make a proposal. Our ADD mentioned that there are other key departments, such as Department of Health, that we could possibly engage on the issues of people with disabilities. Suggest that we don't do written questions, but that we do this, that we continue with the next session, where we could possibly also invite the Department of Health and others, and then and do questions then to the department that we were not able to question today, so that we, because I think, you know, it's such an important topic that we need to continue this conversation. I'm not sure that written questions is the way to go, because we don't always get the answers or the satisfactory answers that we need. Then on the issue of...
No, it does mean... Oh, excuse me, Lizelle. We don't mean that when we write these questions to this department, they are going to respond in writing. We are going to arrange another meeting or another time for the answers. So what we are suggesting is that they are going to reply personally, not in writing, but we are trying to make them ready for the answer so that they don't go back and say that we have to look this answer, etc.
Okay, now I understand, Che. And then, before we go, I wanted to also make an input on the issue of meeting in person. One thing that we will have to consider if we look into that is that committee rooms are not hybrid. None of our committee rooms except for M46 and the Grove Chamber is currently hybrid, which means as soon as you move the meeting to physical, it will exclude, the public that are currently, joining our meetings via Zoom or YouTube channel, etc. And of course, it's also got implications in terms of finances for the department who will be traveling every week then. So as much as I would support meeting in person, I think we would have to look at our most important things and prioritize that. Also because that's been allocated to committees that are dealing with bills. So we need to keep that in mind. And then lastly, because I thought I would have an opportunity to ask questions, which I didn't get, I also wanted to just add my voice to say that we wish on the condolences on behalf of the IFP to the African National Congress on the passing of your colleague, Honourable Gillian, and we will remember her and miss her and keep her family in our thoughts and prayers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Lizelle. Lizelle, other hand. And what about the minister?
Well,
Mamu Kate, yes. Honourable Kate Bilango.
Chairperson, how are you?
Over to you. I'm fine, but not 100% as I have spoken to you. Hello?
No, I understand. I understand.
Continue.
Our secretary is in hospital.
Continue.
Chairperson, I'm online now. Chair, do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Chairperson.
Hmm.
Okay.
Continue.
I wanted to propose that. Chairperson.
Yes, I'm listening. I can hear you. You're audible enough.
Because when I start talking, you said talk. When I start talking, you said talk. I don't know whether you hear me or not.
No, it's the air force.
I was saying.
Talk. Okay, sis. I'm listening.
Okay. Yes. I wanted to propose that instead of having a physical meeting, like Honorable Van der Merwe has indicated, I think what we need to prioritize is to have one or two departments to present instead of having more than two, because we end up not having enough time to engage with the presentation, and also bearing in mind that we need to rush to attend the house. So my take will be that, Chair, if next time maybe we can have only one department to present or two departments, so we'll have enough time to engage the presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Is there any other hand, Yoli?
No, Chairperson, there isn't.
Where is the minister's hand? Was next the minister?
Yes, I think she's raised her hand, Chairperson, to request that the questions to be submitted on time to the department.
Okay. Yes. No, I remember that. Okay, honorable members. We have taken note of all what you have said. We understand this issue of rushing for the bus. For instance, today, the house is going to start at 3. We still have some time, but the only handicap with us is that we have to get into the bus. And in the bus, you can't tell people that, okay, no, don't talk, don't do A, B, C, D. Two, I think, meanwhile, we are unable to have the physical meeting. Let's try and attempt on trying to schedule the meetings to such an extent that one presentation at a time, not too many presentations, so that we can have enough time for us to deliver it on the presentation. I think I'm in line with that. Because the reality of the matter is I have spoken to you or deserve to you that we don't have tickets on. We are struggling. We still have to borrow tickets from one member to another member. And it takes a process because it should fire the chief whip and all the stuff. So we might experience a problem. But we would stay and try to see on how can we keep this. Challenge that we are expecting. And then, because now I'm gonna cut when and that let's rather do this for the next meeting and then come back, and Yuri is going to talk to Lindy, and Lindy is going to make time for us, for the department, to answer the question, not give us the written response, because that one doesn't work. Even if you want to make a follow-up on it, you are unable to do that. Thank you very much, honorable members, for understanding the plight that we are experiencing. Otherwise, let's attend the meeting. The meeting has attended. We wish to thank everyone, especially from the department, different ones. Thanks ever so much for affording time to give us the important information. Thanks. Meeting closed.